good.
Hey, Bob.
This is a regular meeting of the Board of Directors, excuse me, of the Groveland Community Services District on December 11th, 2018. It is 10 a.m., or excuse me, it's about 10:02 a.m., and we'll call the meeting to order. Pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll call board members, Robert Swan, President Armstrong, here. Mr. Edwards.
I'm here.
And Ms. Kukowski.
Here.
Ms. Zamora.
Here.
Where's your laptop?
Yes.
We still are shuffling things, so that's okay.
Thank you.
All right, so all five board members are present. That is a quorum. The first item is to approve the order of agenda. Care to make a motion?
I move that we approve the agenda.
I'll second it.
Okay, moved and seconded to approve the agenda as it exists. Is there any comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? So we have the agenda. So we'll make one note before we do, just before we go into public comment, that we do have a timed item at 11 o'clock. So we'll probably, despite the fact that we have the agenda, we may make a few adjustments as we approach 11 o'clock, so one of our guests get to speak. So, public comment. Public may speak at any item. Okay, Bob, excuse me for a second. All right. The public may speak on any item not on the agenda. We want you to understand that we're listening carefully. However, no action may be taken by the board. The board will only hear questions, and no responses or answers will be provided at this time. Any item that requires lengthy discussion or board action should be submitted in writing to the district secretary, and this will enable the meeting to proceed with the quorum. And as I always point out, there will be time for comments on agenda items when we get to the agenda item. So with that said, is there any public comment on matters not on the agenda? Yes, ma'am.
I will say this probably at every meeting, so bear with me, but I do find it helpful to, when I go back to look at minutes to see what we've done at meetings, when they're a little more detailed, it does help. I'd like to see the minutes a little more, not a lot, just a little more explanation of what was said. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Yes, sir.
Yes. Yes. My name is Tom Parham. I work for California Rural Water Association. We're a nonprofit. We're funded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture to help small rural water and wastewater districts. And I just happened to be here today on a visit. I patrolled around the state, and I heard that you're having a meeting, so I'm taking this opportunity to introduce myself. And also to briefly explain our apprenticeship program. We have started an apprenticeship program. It's being funded by the feds. The Department of Labor and USDA has recognized that there's a shortage of qualified wastewater and water operators. This is to help with that. It's a two-year program to get people up to speed. The really, really cool part is there's funding available to reimburse districts for their wages. So you could get up to 3/4 of their wages and benefits could be reimbursed back to the district. And this will help offset the problem that we all face. You get a guy certified and he goes somewhere else. So this won't stop that from happening, but it will help with the pain of, you know, spending thousands to get somebody certified and then just to lose them down the road. I did the same thing. I did the same thing to my employer. I worked for the city of Colfax. I got certified. And then the pay was just so much better 10 miles down the road that I had to do. So what I did do is I kind of did what Spencer did, is I got elected to the city council, became the mayor, and we were able to raise wages in order to attract and retain qualified personnel. Anyway, on the back page of this is an interest form, and barring that, you could just call our office and say, hey, we want to talk about the apprenticeship program. It's days of classes a month, and the idea is to get them up to a grade 3 level in 2 years. They might not have the experience, but they'll have the knowledge. So I'll just drop this off.
Are you Santa?
He is a personal friend of mine. I only brought it.
Pass one down.
You're the secretary and general manager. That's a good deal there.
Okay, thank you.
Can help.
Yes, sir.
Is your website here?
There's a website on my card. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. We'll put this.
I got one more.
$5.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Made a copy.
Oh, he wants a copy.
Do you have one more?
Of what? I got one in my car.
Here, give him this one.
I believe that whole thing is available online at our website.
That's it. Back to
what,
sir? Yeah. Can I take a picture of that?
That's,
he wants the,
there you go.
Oh, no, I want to see it. Oh, look at your cards.
Okay. That one's for him.
I don't want your card.
No, I want him to have my card.
Oh, okay.
So much excitement.
We'll get
thank
it eventually.
You. Well, that was unexpected.
Okay. Yeah.
Very good. All right.
Good deal.
Is there any other public comment? Anybody else got any goodies for us?
That was a good comment.
Okay. Moving on to information items. Staff reports.
Fire department report. Good morning, Andrew Murphy, Assistant Chief.
Morning.
So I just wanted to give a brief report on what's been going on. So this month we had 30 incidents, or in November we had 30 incidents, 24 of them were medical calls. One was a structure fire on November 4th off Point View Drive, and that fire was contained within 30 minutes, so it was a good stop. And then, of course, another difficult extrication and rescue up Highway 120 at Smith Station on the 16th. Unfortunately, there was a fatality, and then the other person was transported to the hospital. So I want to talk a little bit, too, about staffing. CAL FIRE is in the... Fortunately, we've had some weather, and we're starting to downstaff. Unit-wide, we're down to 13 engines. So what happens is there's six of our stations have two engines, and normally during fire season, including Groveland here. So those engines in the first wave get eliminated. The second engine, the layoffs occur for the seasonal employees. So, and then we shut our high country stations up at Hermit Springs and Skull Creek. So we're down to 13 engines as of yesterday. And then on the 17th, we're planning to go into what we call now the base staffing. It used to be winter staff. There's been all kinds of names for it. But so we're going to basically end fire season next Monday, and we'll go into the Amador period, which the Groveland District provides for the Amador station to be covered here at Groveland CAL FIRE. So that'll be another funded engine here by the district through the winter period until we open fire season. So that'll be with two personnel, just like the station here at on Main Street. We also hope, we've requested, there's a whole process to go through to get rid of all the burn restrictions. Right now you can burn all day, but you still have to have a permit and a 4-foot pile, and there's other restrictions. So we're hoping that next Monday all the restrictions will be eliminated. Personnel, just people, just remember out in the public and for us too, we're still responsible, and you're still responsible for your pile. So always heed, there's good instructions on those permits if you have them. They're not required when we go to open burning, but they, there could be, as it's been the last few winters, long periods of dry weather where you could still have a fire escape from your control, and just to use those precautions to prevent that. We've seen a rash of fires, and this one up here wasn't a chimney fire, but throughout the county and this time of year, as people use their chimneys, we're starting to see more chimney fires. So we've had a few of them in the last few weeks down in the 108 corridor. Just remember, folks, to have your chimneys looked at and flues cleaned, and that's really preventable. So just supposed to remember to stay on top of that. And then one of the other things we've been working kind of late to the trough. My apologies, we've been working with the CCI grant. You may have heard through the news the governor set aside, the governor and the legislature set aside millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars over the next 5 years for fuel reduction projects in the state, and it's through the California Climate Investment Program through the Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. So we've been working with staff to identify a project, which Jones Hill has been identified as a potential fuel reduction area to help protect the infrastructure of the district, as well as to tie in with some other fuel breaks that the Fire Safe Council is working on to help protect the community. So it's a grant. It's a non-match. There's no match. It'd be about $130,000 grant if we get it, and to treat about 100, I think it's 111 acres to start out with. And then this project is continuing. That's been funded, or projected to be funded for at least the next 5 years. I think we'll see more money with all the devastation we've had coming out. So we're going to work and identifying other projects as well that meet those things to protect the community and the infrastructure of the district.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Thank you.
Very good.
Thanks,
Jay. Thank you. Okay, General Manager's report.
Hello, good morning. Hang on, I've got, I was all queued up and prepared for Louie's report. So, hang on just 1 second, let me get this. All right. And then we can, I'm always going to enjoy this picture. I won't use it for every single report, but I think it was a pretty fun time. Anyway, we have, again, I'm not addressing a huge amount of topics here because we've got a lot on our agenda. I want to keep you up to date on a few things that we've talked about. One of them is that we talked about implementing the potential cost recovery fees that the district has in its policy manual but has never put in place, and that is to charge those that are not taxpayers of the community when we respond with the fire department and other emergency equipment. The thing is with that, there's a lot more research and coordination that needs to occur. There's really not even any board direction that I can look for at this point. I don't have an agenda item, and in all reality, it's probably going to take a couple more months to pull this together, just because the data is not in a format that we need. The emergency events don't normally produce the data that we need to know how many of those would be billable, how much they would be billable for. And we're also having a little bit of time and effort to contact other entities to get more information about their program and how successful it is, the percentage that they're recovering of what they bill, and all that, to be able to present to the board. Because for you to make a decision on whether we're going to implement this, because it will be a big deal both politically and effort, we want to make sure that it's going to recover the cost. That's the goal of it. We don't want it to cost us money to bill people for these types of responses, and the fire department will be a big part of this evaluation and helping us out and getting through that. So just want to let you know we've got a number of steps. We know exactly what we need to do to get there. It's just a matter of working through that, and in all reality, we estimate that it'll probably be in March, maybe April, but I'll keep you informed on when we'll be back with that. Hang on just a second, I'm just gonna reformat that real quick. So I don't know if there are any particular questions about that, but I'll get through my report and then see if we've got any additional questions. I just want to make sure that you knew that that hadn't fallen off the radar, that it's still there. It's just going to take some time. The next thing is, it's just yesterday we received a check, which was an application fee for a sewer main extension. This is a property in Pine Mountain Lake that has a failed septic system. It's been failed for quite some time. They can't get a permit to rebuild it. Unfortunately, the amount of effort that's necessary to connect the property is significant. They're going to have to do a main extension. And the first step in our policy and our process is they send us a check, which is an application fee. We determine the feasibility. Once we say it's feasible, then they typically go out and design the work under our review, and then also they'll go out and get a contractor, and we'll verify the contractor. They do the work under our inspection. Okay, that's the normal process. Then they dedicate it to the district, and then they've got an investment in a main that goes to their property but passes other properties along the way and is available for connection for those other properties. We can enter into reimbursement agreement with them where, as those other folks along the way, say there's four properties in between, as they connect, they pay a proportional share on a connection-by-connection basis, and then it gets reimbursed to the person who paid for the main extension to begin with. It seems kind of unfair that they have to pay for that entire extension, but there's been no financial contribution by these people to this operation. And it's just like a new development project in all reality, somebody creating some lots and connecting to the sewer. The other option that our policy allows is if the property owner requests that the district can do the design work and construction work, and they would be paying the cost directly. In other words, we'd get a deposit of what that cost is, and then we would manage that construction cost and everything else, and they would pay the cost. Unfortunately, the minimum that this would be is about $50,000. They seem to be ready to go with this. I'm not saying they shouldn't. I mean, they can't rebuild their septic, and their septic is failing. So it's one of those unfortunate situations. But between $50,000 and $80,000 is what we estimate for just using rough engineering numbers on a per foot
basis. What street is this on?
I don't know. I don't have the application with me.
Oh, okay.
Actually, if I went back to the photo, it doesn't give the street name, but I believe it's this section, if my mouse is tracking this upper set. Well, it's way too fast.
The red zone?
Yeah. When we get to the point where we have an agreement to go forward with construction or there's some board action, we'll get into more detail. And right now we're at the feasibility level. They've given the deposit to do the evaluation. The first thing we'll do is actually get an engineer's estimate to them and get them to say, we will design it or we'd like for you to design it.
Do you happen to remember how many other properties would be affected?
About four, I think. Four in addition to them. Yeah.
So ultimately they're looking at $15,000 to $20,000.
Yeah, I mean that would be reasonable. Typically anything less than $25,000 is considered pretty reasonable.
I have a question. Are they within the 300 feet to hook up to sewer? Or they're beyond it? That's
no, they're 200. There's about 260 to 300 feet.
Okay, and so are they not allowed to do an engineered septic?
No, because they're too close to the sewer.
They're too close because they're within the 300 feet. If they were beyond the 300 feet, they can do an engineered septic.
That I don't know. That's up to the county.
Okay.
You know, because we don't permit septic, so I don't know what the site conditions are.
If the county gave them a permit for it, I suppose they could do it. I don't know.
I was just curious.
I don't know that we'd insist they hook up if they wanted to do that alternative, but they'd have to get a permit from the county.
Yeah, that is a policy decision of the board. They're within the district boundaries. They're within 300 feet. Our ordinance requires it. It's If it doesn't, when we get to the ordinance revision, it probably will, because could be the next door neighbor or somebody in between has the same issue. You know, you can pretty much count on these being situational in an area based, because it's usually soil conditions and all that. So I just want to make you aware of it, just in case you hear about it. We're a ways off from anything occurring, really. It could be a couple months before this, but I'll keep you informed on where we are, just because it's a big deal. Another thing we've been really working on and has been really exciting, and we kind of tore into it when we cleaned up my office a little bit there, is, it's twofold. We're working on procedures, a lot of internal office procedures on how we move information forward, similar to, it may seem really simple, CEQA notice of exemption, the board adopted it, or I approve a notice of exemption, but there's a whole process that it has to go through with a certain number of copies here and there, and file with the state sometimes, and file with the county at all times, and so those procedures we're putting in, working out and putting in writing so that it's not person dependent. In other words, if I walk away, if Jennifer walks away, if we have a changeover in the office, all of these things continue to exist. Contractor payment processing seems easy enough. Contractor submits a payment request and you pay it. Well, you've got a huge body of law that tells you differently on how you deal with the contractor payments in a public project, and how you deal with preliminary liens and retention of funds and all that. So we worked out some a payment process that's a two-page document on how we get through that and where we post it and where we how we file notices of completion and all that. The most exciting thing that we're working on is records management, both paper and electronic, implementing our records retention and destruction policy. We have, what do you call that little storage trailer?
The
Connex. We have trailers full of documents and papers that are outside of our retention schedule that or are draft or don't have the value to the district, and we're required by our retention schedule to process that. And we've also got a huge amount of records in here that we're accumulating that make it less efficient and more difficult to get through a research project or to know what's the most current or anything else, because it's just stacked up and moved from manager to manager to manager to manager and then got pushed over in a corner, and then, you know, and we want to make sure that we have the most current, the most understood documents, and that they're the right ones. And so there's a process that in board policy on records retention and destruction, and also we're putting together a procedure on how we handle those things internally, and then also getting dialed in on scanning and creating electronic records of any files that have some type of significance to the district but are beyond that useful life where we have to keep them in paper. And so anyway, some districts pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to get this done. We're gonna give it an attempt to try to kick it ourselves and pick away at it, and we've done pretty good on some preliminary stuff. So anyway, I just wanted to make you aware that we've got a lot of really good administrative work going on too.
Are these policies for processing things, are these like checklists you're making of the steps you have to go through?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I envisioned by your description.
They're generic, so in other words, they are based on, they do need to be updated when things like laws change or, board policies change or anything else. You know, they need to be updated, or as we have changes in staff or technology or anything that affect those, but they're internal procedures on how we implement your policy.
Right.
So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. That it for you?
Yep, done.
Okay. Okay, operations and maintenance. I got to go back and set that up.
I
can start here. First thing I want to say, we had six employees gain certifications, state-recognized certifications this last month. We had one in wastewater. Actually, three in wastewater. We had one wastewater grade one, we had two collections grade one, and we had distribution and operators grade two. So, and a commercial class A license. All was last month. So,
awesome.
Everybody's moving forward to being certified.
Outstanding.
I know I've said this before, and I know you can't really probably bring all six of them in at the same time because then otherwise everything would stop. When people get a certification, I'd like to have them come in here for 2 minutes at a board meeting.
So they can applaud them in person.
Those things aren't easy to get.
Hard stuff. Duly noted, I will note that. Next time.
That's great.
You probably have to space them out a little bit because if you bring all six of them in at once, probably be paying overtime.
The next were our capital projects. We had Moyle out actually looking at the flume repair and then also the Freddie Road sewer and water line repair, which they were supposed to start Monday. They had a little bit of a step back from Ford Construction. They're actually starting tomorrow. They're going to start with the sewer line first, and then they'll move into the water line, but they are saying probably within 2 days they'll have that completed, and we'll just be waiting for the back sea sample to come back on the water line, and then we can put everything back in service, and good to go. And then Ford will come back in and finish out the grade of the road, and then pave, and hopefully that will be back up and running for the community.
And that sets us up for the tunnel outage that's coming in January, right?
Yes, okay. Definitely. Yep. speaking of that, we actually been working at AWS a lot lately just to make sure it's going to be running and operational. Any kind of bugs and kinks we got worked out, we are ready to go. That place is going to be flowing 100% for us. We actually got the generator set for tank 2. We haven't been able to try that new booster skid up there because of Freddie Road being out. So if that gets back in and Ford gets to a point in the road that we feel comfortable with pushing water through that line with them while they're working there, we'll be able to attempt to move water from tank 2 to tank 3, which is going to help us through the tunnel outage because we can move water from our plant at the maintenance yard to tank 2 way faster than we can through the whole system up to tank 3.
Right.
So we're hoping to be able to use that this outage, but if the road might hold us back. So, on the water side, we just had our basic routinely calibrations of all of our equipment on the water plants. We repaired a hydrant on Mount Jefferson. That's pretty much it on that. We don't need to go through all of it.
The flume, just real quick on the flume,
yes.
The timing of that.
Most likely it's going to be pushed out till spring. With the groundwater that we've already had now, it's really soft out there. If they were getting any kind of piece of equipment in there, it's going to do more damage than good for us right now. And then we're getting into colder weather, so concrete doesn't cure very well in colder weather. So there is a temperature range that you can pour concrete in, and we're pretty much right on the cusp and contact directly put their name on something like that. So
is this going to cause us any reimbursement issues?
No. I mean, we've got time. Yeah, they'll be able to get it done. And they'll likely be able, just depending on what our weather does, and it soaks in pretty quickly, and you give them a week of decent weather, and it'll be pretty good. It'll probably be spring again, March, maybe April.
So if we get rain this winter, we're gonna have to keep a pretty close eye on the reservoir.
Yeah, we talked contingency and everything else, and we may have to call them in to do some stabilization, possibly maybe shoot some temporary concrete if we start to have some problems. But at this point, if it's just normal rainfall, normal storms, we should be okay. It's just not just completely torn apart already, you know.
Yeah, we walked in with them, and actually, the ground is so saturated out there that it's just going to deteriorate the banks even more, and they're going to have to bring in more material and all that if they get in there with a piece of equipment, so I'm going to push it out.
Okay.
Going to the wastewater, we did lift station 7, and actually all of our main hubs we've been hitting more often now, going in there, cleaning the flows, pumping them down, running water in the old existing, the old cans that are right next to the new cans, trying to just get some of that stagnant water stuff out of the old cans, and talking with the engineer about, is there a way that we can determine that the smell is 100% coming from that station and not contributed from the plant here going down during the evening with the wind shifts and before we spend big money. So there is options out there to get, he called them vials, and I haven't really seen any spreadsheet or specs on them yet, but I guess you can place them out there and they'll pick up any kind of smells, and most likely I would imagine they would turn a color or something on concentration of gas smells. So we're in the process of doing that, but as of right now, we're just trying to get out there, maintaining them, constantly just flushing water through the old cans. And you can see some of the stuff that gets trapped in the old cans. That is on lift station 5 pump, but that stuff's living in these old cans. And all the main hubs have them. They left the old cans in service while they put the new cans in, and the outlet pipe is about a foot off the bottom of the wet wells. So this stuff settles out in there, and that's what we're trying to break loose and send in. And we're thinking it's contributing to it. We don't have a piece of equipment that can clean those. Right now, you got to think of it as being carpet. And those ones are so deep that our vacuum truck won't pull from. So we can sit there all day long and do this, but they're our main hubs, so they have high flows. We'd have to shut out about 5 different stations just to get those to even get a chance to work a little bit on them. But that's the kind of stuff we pull them periodically, the pump, and we cut the stuff off, we call it mop, and we bring it back to the yard and dispose of it. But some of it settles out in the whole cans. So we're looking at all the options, not just one. All of them are contributing to it. So, and we actually went on to cleaning of our lift stations. We actually made sure that we took the footage of the force mains. We calculated how many gallons of sewage are in those, and we actually run cycles of fresh water through the force mains to try to get a little bit of clean, and that way nothing goes stagnant in there as well. And so, and you can see this is lift station 14. That gray stuff around the bottom there, we call it oatmeal, and that's what's at the bottom of these stations, and we can't get them out of 5, 6, 7, and 8. We just can't. It's too deep. See, we can pump all these down just to this. We get all that out. We bring it back here. We process it. We get rid of it, and we start fresh. We can't do that at those main hubs.
Because it's so deep, the back truck won't pull it out?
Yeah.
And how old's the back truck?
2006, 2007.
Okay. It's not the vacuum component of it. It's the consistency of this material.
Okay.
And it's and it's the specific gravity of it, the weight of this material, and it can be vacuumed with equipment that we don't have.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, which is ignoring for the moment what the cost of it would be. There is equipment that could do this.
Yes.
I mean, it exists.
Well, there is perfect suction that certain footage you can only pull at.
Yeah.
But some of these other equipment, they induce air into the side of the bottom of the nozzle there, and so it can help out. We're actually looking at our annual cleanings coming up. We have a contractor come in to do the video inspection of our sewer lines and hydro flushing of our sewer lines, and we're going to see if their piece of equipment will work on these. But the bad thing on the older cans, that's what the new cans look like. They're wide open. You can get in there. You can access everything you need. The older cans were designed with the pumps above the wet well. So all you have is a 24-inch access hole.
Yeah.
So the access getting into the bottom is very minimal. And trying to get it to go over to where these the floor is or where this problem's at is going to be hard, because on those bigger pieces of equipment, their outlets are 6 inches. So to try to get that to flex in there, but
once the tanks are cleaned, during the annual cleaning, can they be filled with cement or something to a certain level that raises the bottom of the tank?
I would say that'd be huge. And when they, I don't know if it was thought about when they did the upgrades to all those stations or not, but it definitely does, because they had to drill in the new pipe. It's new pipe, what, 36 inches? But it's a foot off the ground. So all the stuff comes into the old can, fills up, solid settle out, and then it spills over into the new cans. So.
And those new, the old cans really aren't needed, that depth isn't needed.
We need to have an engineering evaluation of it, because in my experience, they were probably assuming that is where the solids would settle out. It would give us a location to be able to go in and get those solids out and not have them cause problems with the pumps, in reality. But it's doing both. It's accumulating in there, we can't get it out, and it is causing problems with the pumps. So it's just there is definitely an engineering solution for it.
That's a good idea, though.
No, it really is. We talked about that, but like Pete said, we'll have to have
smart girl.
Somebody come and look at it, and it's just the access of getting into those old cans.
Yeah, we just want to make sure that doesn't cause us an unintended consequence that is something else.
Right.
But I mean, that certainly should be. I mean, that seems like it. Right now, you're not getting any value out of that extra foot because it's full of crap.
Right.
No pun.
And it could be.
And there is cement that you could pour underwater.
Oh yeah, yeah. All concrete.
Or it could be, some type of a retrieval basket or something that's rigged up below the pipe, so that it's something you could pull out instead of having to try to go into or whatever. Confined spaces, especially that small, are pretty impossible to get into.
Yeah,
I just read this thing about North Carolina or South Carolina. They had a sewer treatment plant that had that stuff, we call them, get lodged in a couple of their pumps. And they actually literally sent divers down, because it's a big plant, there's 90 feet, they go down, and they actually wrap this stuff in bundles and hold it out.
Holy
by crane.
God.
That's how much...
That's a shitty job.
Is,
boy,
yeah.
You're not kidding.
So,
you know that television show?
Yeah.
It is. Like I said, we modified our cleaning of the stations, we make sure that we flush the force mains. We always test the station before we leave, and so now we're just making sure that we push enough gallons per minute to clean out the force mains and the old stuff's hanging out in there. So, like I said, we're thinking that this plant is also contributing to the smell of the Station 7, not just 7, with the wind shift. We put a little windsock on top of our building here, and every day in the afternoon, it just goes straight down that canyon, follows the power lines right down to the Station 7. Ford Construction's actually asked us, said, hey, around 5 o'clock every day, it smells on this corner of the road. Like, wind shifts. So
we said
in the mornings, we're fine, but at a certain time of the day, it just begins to smell down there. So, and then one guy goes,
get the job done and get out of there.
He goes,
give him a couple of chocolate chip cookies and tell him to drive on. No, I'm just teasing.
He says he can't do it.
Can we plan it to divert some of this wind?
No, it's just where we're at. It's the terrain of it.
Yeah,
just,
there's
we're
a
in
to
the
divert
terrain
wind.
Coming down on both sides here, and just kind of pushes.
Heating and cooling.
Yeah.
It's going to follow the
up slope, up canyon.
So.
Down slope, down canyon.
We're working on trying to figure out what we can do to get this to go away. It's a process. We don't want to just. Throw money at something and be like, well, that didn't work. Now
right.
We got to do this. And then, so we're going to try to do process elimination, and I think we start doing some of these small things first and just being out there. I don't care if it's 3 days a week. And just trying to get that turned over and fresh and pumped down and just send it to gray here at the plant and keep moving. But during the winter, we lose all of our solids and it goes to water.
Really?
So the VOD goes... The food and stuff, it's pretty much, we have a lot of ionized problems. So the winter time, you shouldn't really have that big of a problem. So.
flushed out.
No additional complaints. Again, we don't log complaints that are lodged on Nextdoor or Facebook or anything else. Only those that come into the office, either phone calls or stop by or whatever. And so, and we're not saying that because it's a non-issue. You see, we're working on it. It's just, I want you to know that it's not a something where we're having a huge, huge outcry.
And if anybody even calls me on my work phone at home, I will come in and have the ladies do a service request because I want documentation for everything I do and everything we do here. That way we have records. Yep. And so if somebody calls me on my work phone at home, I will answer it, and I will return the phone call if I don't answer it. And so, and I actually highly and fully want that because I'd rather get it squashed and try to get a resolution going instead of just going in a circle.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yep. Good man.
Yeah, state mandated reports. We have all of them are due for updates. So we've been working on that, and a lot of them are going to Alfonso. But the SSAP is it's a two-year in-house audit where you just kind of go through, make sure it's still up to what we're doing, our standards, and then make sure that all of the contact information for certified operators and stuff that are here and they're still actually here, or if their positions changed or whatnot. And then the five-year update means it gets updated to the state website, and it's a complete overhaul to make sure all the verbiage and everything is still correct. We have
if I recall correctly, the SSMP is about 150 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
I mean, this is one of those things we do because we have to, because the state requires it.
And you do that one?
I'm working on it right now with some of the verbiage. And actually, I had Alfonso go over some of it too to make sure some of the engineering part of it is still legit. And
it's more than that, a little bit. When you say it's a state requirement, it is a state requirement, but it came as a result of the sanitary sewer overflow regulations that went into effect in about 2005, I think it was, with the state. But it puts a level of civil responsibility on the operators. And also a higher level of responsibility on the district. In other words, if they do not conduct their work in accordance with the requirements of the state and all of that, then they can be individually held responsible. These operators of the system. In other words, if they don't report overflows or don't say they maintained something and didn't maintain something, fudged records, that kind of stuff, they can lose their license, their certification, and be prosecuted. And that's it's a violation of federal law. If they're acting within the course and scope of their duties, and there's still a problem, they're completely covered by the umbrella of the district. But if they go outside that and do something, but also it requires that the district mandate certain things in their ordinance, like mandatory connections, like mandatory maintenance of sewer systems, private sewer systems, discharges from sewer into our system. There are certain maintenance procedures that are mandatory that we have to address, and those kind of things are that's a really serious plan that we have to take seriously, and that it does affect our operation, and that if we don't follow it, we've got a problem. And if the board, if this is one thing where you'll hear me say this is for compliance with our sanitary sewer management plan, we absolutely have to do it.
Yeah.
And I'll leave it to you. If you say absolutely no, then, you know, or if it can be a contentious issue because it's a very expensive plan to implement from a staffing perspective, from the number of people, the level of effort, the certification requirements, the maintenance requirements, the you know, all of those things. So anyway, I wasn't coming at you with. I was just explaining.
No, sorry, I didn't mean to. I wasn't trying to imply that this is just some sort of stupid paperwork. I was more just trying to give you an idea of what the size of the audit is.
Yeah.
It's all important stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know it was that involved. I didn't even know it existed until just right now, you know.
It's one of those things that, you know, I mean, even if a contractor is working on your sewer system and they create a problem and create a spill, the district is still responsible. Now, we can go after the contractor, but still, there's no forgiveness. You can't say, but a contractor did it. Oh, somebody threw a G.I. Joe in a toilet and it plugged up our sewer. There's no forgiveness.
Didn't somebody put something down one of the lines and caused the soft bomb?
Yeah.
So that's our...
No, down the big old flat area. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
We're supposed to have an ordinance in place that prohibits that. Don't put softballs down the sewer. Anyway.
If they want to do something, they do it.
Sorry.
That's all right. No, it is you.
Here. Emergency response plan.
Emergency response plan for drinking water. Any kind of emergency happens, contamination to the water source, something fails at one of our treatment plants, and raw water gets into the system, which won't really happen because it goes into a clear well first. But that kind of stuff, it's huge. We have to update those. And with that one, too, there's an emergency disinfection plan that kind of goes in there. So if we do have how are we going to fix it? How are we going to isolate the problem in our system, get it disinfected, and get it back into operational parameters and all the plans are followed by the state rules, regulations, and all that. So that's being done. All of our operation plans for our water treatment plants are being updated right now as well. And they're pretty much cut and dry. The only one that's really going to change is the AWS because we added extra filters. So that you know, triggers a complete redo of that part, and then our water consumption audit, which is new, it started last year. Last year it was with working with Alfonso and going through billing and all that kind of stuff. They give us a number and they rate how our water loss is, and so this year it needs to be updated, and we're actually looking at because we can't, I can't think of the word for some reason right now, we can't validate it in-house. It has to be validated by somebody outside. And I just found out it's a cost that I thought was a little extreme, but it was $4,000 for having somebody to go through all of our paperwork and say it's validated. So I'm looking at other companies.
What is it exactly they're validating? How much water we're using, and then how much water we're losing?
Pretty much how much unaccounted for.
Yeah, okay.
In a way. And then, so.
That is new, right?
Just started last year.
There's a limit on it, too.
There is. And this is
a penalty if we, I think there's a penalty for some kind of problem, we exceed the allowable loss.
Is this all part of the reduction?
It's all part of it, yep. It's all going to work hand in hand, and then, you know, if our number was way outside the box of what they think is normal, they might come in and say, you got to do leak detection on your whole system, and then we'd have to, there's no saying, no, we're fine, and we'd be like, no, you're doing it.
Great.
Crazy.
We're average right now. So.
Are we?
Yeah.
That was going to be my next question, thank you.
We've done really well compared to 2013 on all of our, because I do the conservation report every month, and we've done well compared to 2013 with the numbers they're using, so.
Anything else, Rick?
Yeah, we got to go into the maintenance part of it.
I thought you did that.
No.
I don't have.
You had some cool pictures, man. All right. We had some siding damage to our maintenance building, little office back there. And so the guy said, you know, we can do some siding. It's straight, rectangle, put some new siding in there. We pulled it off, and floor joists were rotten. Whole top plate of the building was rotten.
Yeah, I read that.
So, anyways, it turned into being an expensive thing. And would have never seen it without pulling the siding off. So, that was pretty much. That was the biggest part of the man's part.
So what's going to happen with all that rotted wood? Are you guys still going to do it, or are you going to...
You're going to have somebody who's
carpenter
savvy and floor joists and building structure and all that kind of stuff come in and assess it. Yeah. So that just goes to show, like, a lot of our buildings have been
neglected.
We haven't put money into them. There it is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Water.
And what happened was that building had no gutter on the backside of it, and
Is that the lab building?
No, that's the operation or the maintenance building upstairs.
Oh, okay. That's where the office is. The maintenance guys go in there. That building?
Yes.
Okay.
Kind of where it's the smallest building that has the most guys in it.
Yeah.
That's the one.
So we will be addressing these things. That's why we have the investments this year in our budget, and we'll be getting them done.
As I recall, wasn't that building like a transportable building? You could move in here and
I actually looked at
that one on a burn pile, like another transportable building.
No, outrageous cost.
Oh, really?
It's amazing how much those buildings really are.
Okay.
I actually looked into it.
I was just throwing that out there.
Let me just tell you, that little building right there, that's, 60 by 30 or whatever it was probably about $120,000.
Wow.
And so, we figured some siding would be fine. We spent $2,500 on some siding, be good to go. We pulled that off of it. Oh, all right.
Great.
So,
do you know how deep, how far back all
this? It doesn't look like it goes all the way, so probably be on it. I'm not going to make any assumptions, but... I don't think we're going to have to tear the whole floor of the building down, so I want somebody that knows the structure of the building. But that's kind of some of the big stuff that we're working on, and normal stuff. So.
Any questions?
Yeah, thanks, Lou.
Thank you, Lou. Thanks for having me on finance.
This time of the year is kind of a really slow time for admin because we get through the budget, we get through closing the fiscal year, we get through the audit, and so we kind of go into this like super high, and then we go into this kind of super low, and then usually all of us get really sick. That's kind of been the trend for the last several years. But one of the things that we kind of work on now is our fog program, fats, oil, and grease. This is the time of year where people are in and they're, you know, cooking holiday dinners. And so I've had Renee, our temp, put together a really nice pamphlet, trifold flyer that's going to be going up on our website. As well as being distributed to our customers. We also move into winterizing. So we just recently changed the sign at the firehouse because we're starting to now get that colder weather. So also updating the website on informing the public about, you know, winterizing their home, tips, tricks, also letting them know that they are responsible for water loss. So if they don't winterize their house and the pipe bursts, that's an internal plumbing that's very expensive, and it's something that they're responsible for. So working on that, getting that information out as well. And then, like Pete had, just to reiterate, the biggest thing now is this records purge. This has been a project that I've been wanting to do for years. It kind of seems like there was this time at the district where computers were kind of working their way in and the paper was working their way out, and so people kind of throw paper stacks all over the place, and it's a monstrous job. I mean, the amount of paperwork and how disconnected, you know, we'll find Long Gulch Ranch stuff in the engineer office, and we'll find Long Gulch Ranch stuff up in here, and we'll find Long Gulch Ranch stuff. So having Renee here now has been helpful because now we've kind of pulled everything out, starting with those back offices. And we say, okay, what do we have here? And then how do we start categorizing them and organizing them and then figuring out what we can toss? And then we're going to start a records catalog and be able to identify what they are, where they're stored, and then, you know, at the end of this whole process, to hopefully get all of these documents electronically archived, so they're much easier. Because as of right now, when I come across something, I'm digging in old files and trying to, you know, trace the breadcrumbs to find out why something, certain things happen. If it's usually after 2006, a lot of electronic records don't really exist, aren't very well after 2006 here at the district. So it's a very positive thing. It's something that has been needed to be done for a long time. I'm very excited about. So that's kind of the next really, really big project that the administrative department is working on, and I expect it to take a significant amount of time, but we're definitely started in the right direction and started to chip off at this massive iceberg. That's my book.
Awesome.
That's good. Yeah, I like the idea of the electronically archiving the stuff. You're going to be scanning them in? Is that what you can do?
We will. We're going to have to look into options. We're thinking maybe the possibility of retaining maybe sort of like Renee, like attempt to work specifically towards that, because I do know that, I know Pine Mountain Lake had done this several years ago, and they had a company come in and do it. And it's very, very, very expensive, and it's just not something that we really have the dollars for yet. It's something that would be really beneficial. And so we're thinking maybe, if and when Amanda comes back from maternity leave, we can then utilize Renee as her temp position to really help the district with this big project with a much more minimal cost, because she's proven herself to be a very competent, very capable individual that follows directions very well, and she's extremely efficient. So she's...
It helps a lot.
Yeah, it helps tremendously. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
Any questions? All right. Let's move on to the consent calendar.
Bob, we have a timed agenda item at 11.
We'll move on to our 11 o'clock.
And we have our guest here from Coffin Associates.
We could maybe get through the consent calendar before
we... I mean, it's up to you. I just, we've got a limited period of time with the...
Thanks. Hang in there, Chief.
Okay, thank you, Chief.
Have a good day.
All right. Well, let's move on to item 6. Then. I think I saw somebody coming in that looked like they might be that person. Yeah. There you are.
Any introductions?
Which?
6E.
Yeah.
6E.
You don't have a
safe
sample on
the
6E.
You do. And I provided a slightly revised staff submittal, just based on the fact that that this item has been on the board's agenda, and we reported about it initially in October, and then in November it was on your agenda, and we were looking for some additional clarification and input from the consultant that we hired, which is Coffin Associates, and Katie is here to represent them. She's the one who did or directed the work and would be able to answer your questions. And again, the goal here is for us to take the first step in being able to complete the classification and compensation study. So, all right.
Great. Thank you. My name is Katie Kaneko. I'm the president of Coffin Associates, and we're a human resources consulting firm. We work with the public sector. About 65% of our work is classification and compensation. We've been in business for about 34 years. We actually started in Gail Koff, founded the business in the water, wastewater niche, and have since expanded to work with just about every public agency throughout the state of California. So we're pretty familiar with a lot of the work that's being done here at the Community Services District, and we've been working with them to begin this total compensation study. The three elements that need to be decided upon before we begin the study is the agencies that we're going to be surveying, and that's what we're here to speak about today, Our goal is to find 10 to 12 agencies that are going to be the most similar in profile to the Community Services District and are going to be fruitful in providing us data. So we want to make this as efficient as possible, process as possible. And what we do is we go through and we look at the geographic proximity. We start there, trying to find agencies that are similar in profile and the types of services that they provide. And of course, that was a challenge here, just because of your remoteness. And in our experience, having worked in this industry, finding agencies that do both water and wastewater treatment, as well as collections and distributions, and the size that you are, it was a little bit challenging. So we did have to expand. You know, you can see from the list that we provided in some of these agencies that are actually more closely in profile in the services provided and the size are almost 300 miles away. But we did our best to cast this net to try to find the most similar agencies out there. So what we do is we focus on geographic proximity, full-time equivalents, so the number of employees that are hired by each of these agencies, the agency expenditures, cost of living we assess as well. We actually tried to assess population, but that was a little challenging because a number of these agencies are, seasonal residents. And so it was hard to get, we tried to get account data, which is an indicator of population served. And then, but we couldn't find consistent information from each of these agencies regarding that. So we ultimately dropped that from the assessment. But what we do is we gather the data from the total number of agencies related to these criteria, and then we rank each of those criteria high to low, with the lowest number assessment being the most similar to the Community Services District. And so what you have is our analysis where, you know, we went through, we've used an absolute value formula, so it's how close each of these agencies is to the CSD and the ranking in each of these criteria. So we ranked all of those factors that I mentioned, summed up the totals of the rankings, and then choose the 12 that are most similar to the agencies. So that, you know, that gives us a sense that, you know, all of this work is not going to be in vain. We're going to try to get as much information and choosing those agencies that are the most similar and do similar services gives us a good sense that we're going to get a good amount of data. We have to have at least 4 matches per agency, and our goal is to get much more. And as we go in and we look at, we match class description to class description. We don't just look at titles, we look at why does that position exist, what are the types of duties that are being performed within those classifications, and what are the minimum qualifications, what kind of training and experience and certifications do they have that make them qualified to do that work. And if we find that they're at least 70% similar, then they're included as a match. So it's a very, very thorough analysis. Happy to answer any questions. To delve deeper in any one area. The other areas that we need to determine is, you know, what classifications we're going to actually survey, and we want to make sure that we get a good range of each of the functions that are being offered within the services district, and then, of course, the base salary and benefits information.
Yeah, during our last meeting, one of the discussions from part of the community was they felt that the Hetch Hetchy, San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, Hetch Hetchy, that based their salaries on the city of San Francisco is what we were told. Now, I'm just kind of paraphrasing what was said during the meeting. Mm-hmm. They felt that Hetch Hetchy, because they are public utilities based out of San Francisco, pay on a San Francisco basis and would be a little bit high for this area. Now, I'm throwing that out there. I think, wasn't that you that said that, Kay?
Yes.
And how does that Hetch Hetchy fit in here for other reasons other than just their pay, or by what you have said, maybe that is the reason they're here? Could you elaborate a little bit on Hetch Hetchy?
So on Hetch Hetchy, my understanding is they have that Hetch Hetchy plant that's closely a proximity to this agency. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like there had been some retention, recruitment and retention issues related to this agency. I cannot tell you, usually my experience is that there's regional pay in a large agency like that. But part of our process will be to get to the heart of that and find out whether they do have regional pay based on geographic proximity of their employees. Now, if they do, that resolves the issue. If they don't, we do have the potential to factor in cost of labor differences to agencies. And what happens there is we're looking at the differences in employer pay that's different than cost of living, which is more regional cost of consumer goods. Mm-hmm. So we subscribe to a database, a national database, and it will give us information about pay differences for this region to the Bay Area. If, in fact, they're using Bay Area salaries, right. We don't know that
That's
yet.
An assumption on my part.
Right. If they are, we can apply that differential to that Bay Area salary to make it more comparable to this region.
Okay.
So that's another approach that we can take to make sure it's an apples-to-apples comparison. So we'll have the ability to do that, and I also want to point out, we use 10 to 12 agencies because we don't want any one agency to have more influence on another. So what we are going to find most likely is there's going to be a cluster of agencies paying around the same, and then there's likely to be one that is very high or one that's very low. That's usually the trend consistently. When we make our recommendations and we report the data, what we do is we target the median. So that's the exact center point of all the data, rather than the average, which can be influenced by very, very high and very, very low. So that's another way that we really try to target in where are most agencies paying. And again, it's data for you to know where you stand. And then what your philosophy is related to that data is, you know, the next step. What you can afford to do, where you feel you need to be, what are the issues. But at least you'll have information to move forward with to make decisions.
Sounds like you're very thorough on that, and it's not just that San Francisco, Hetch Hetchy and San Francisco Public Utilities high pay is not going to be a major factor in determining what our compensation should be here. It will factor in, but it'll factor in appropriately. What do you think, Kay? I mean, by her explanation, this is...
Yes.
I'm sorry, sir. Go ahead.
Try not to talk directly to members.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you, sir. So, you know, it sounds like the thoroughness in your techniques have been honed and mastered to a point where not one... public utility is going to make a major impact. They're all going to make a small impact until we find, and I appreciate this, the exact center. And I appreciate that very much.
So the data will be presented in that way, and then where you feel you need to be even relative to that median, you know, that's an agency decision.
Will your result be in a recommended pay scale or in I refer back to the government when I worked for the government. You know, you had a GS-1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You have something, will you have something along those pays, you know, GS-1, step 4, and stuff like that? Is that what the result will be?
We put together, based on the data that we have obtained, a range structure, salary structure, and we'll be looking at more deeply what's currently in place. Most public agencies have a 5-step system, so they have... ranges, generally they're 2.5% apart, 5 steps within each range that are 5% apart. That's a very standard. Mm-hmm. We'll be looking at what you have. We, you know, likely recommend what the standard is. And then what we do is we use the market data to make recommendations on placing each classification within that range, either based on market data or based on internal relationships. So often if there's a series, you know, systems operator series, there's usually a 1, 2, 3. We only survey the journey level, which we find to be the most common, commonly defined between agencies, and then we align internal equity principles to the entry level and the advanced level.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any questions from the board? Since this is a presentation, I'm going to deviate slightly from our normal practice and say, ask if there's any questions from the public for our, for our speaker. Let's start with you, sir.
I've never heard of step increases in public wastewater.
It's a pretty standard practice. So the range width's 21.5% apart. You bring somebody in, again, at the lower end of the range, generally step one, depending on their experience often. And as they learn the processes and the way the district functions, they move typically on an annual basis through the range until top step. It usually takes about 5 years to get there. And with the idea being, you know, you have to learn how Groveland does things and getting familiar with the different processes, and there's a learning curve, and at some point you're paid.
I'm used to having people pay according to their certification.
You know, sometimes, depending on the certifications too in the agency, sometimes there is certification pay as well, but there still is, I've never seen an agency that doesn't have a range, unless there's a contract with the general manager.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
Yes. Does this range take in the consideration of the union pay scale for these employees?
So
union employees?
We would be making recommendations on all employees, and when we go into each agency, we're really looking at the pay associated with the body of work. So within each agency, they're going to be either in a bargaining unit or not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, we'll find out when we get in there, but it's basically the pay that they would receive.
Okay.
Within that agency associated with that class.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. I have a couple of questions, but when you were talking about Hetch Hetchy and salary, I know two people that went to work for Hetch Hetchy, and they started in the Bay Area.
Okay.
And from here,
uh-huh.
Okay, they start them in the Bay Area, and then they wait to get transferred to this area. They do not lower their pay from
okay.
the Bay Area to move here, and that would kind of be weird. I just wanted to bring that up from the two people that I know. But I had a couple questions here. Are you familiar, or did you make up the RFP, or are you familiar with our RFP that we gave to you?
I am. I haven't looked at it just before
okay.
here, but I'm
so sure. I have a couple of questions regarding, because I've read all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
On page 14 of the RFP, there was a kickoff meeting was there a kickoff meeting as listed on page 14, or is this the kickoff meeting that's listed in the, you know, RFP that says we're going to have a kickoff meeting with Coffin Associates?
So we had a phone call where there
okay.
was three individuals on the call, and we talked about our process and the different elements that we needed to determine and the timeline and all of these different factors.
Okay, and another one is on page 9. It says there was a review panel to evaluate the proposal. Who was on this review panel?
Excuse me, aren't these questions you would be asked of the
yeah.
general manager?
This was a process of... that occurred with the award of the contract, not the content of the
okay.
of the discussion. Now that was
okay. And then there's another question I have here. Your report mentions an email dated July 13th. There were administrative title changes. Were you involved with that, or is that again something that the district, because it talks about an email between GCSD and COP. So I'm just wondering if you're familiar with the administrative title changes.
So if this is related to the RFP, I can guess what this might be. When we put together our proposal, it's based on the number of classifications, and
mm-hmm.
so we usually ask that question. What can we get a list of the classifications that are currently in existence so that we know, then we can look at them and say, which ones do we need to survey? We get a good sense of how much it's going to cost based on how many classifications we're going to be serving. So we almost always ask that question when we get RFPs if we do not have a list of all the classifications. And then we often ask how many, this is usually more involved with class, but how many incumbents are assigned to each as well. But just so we can get a sense of what classifications would be critical.
So you don't change them. Basically, the district gives you a list of things, and you go from their job descriptions and classification, what the district gives you, and you work from that, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
I have a comment. I'm with California Rural Water Association, a wastewater specialist. And the problem with, you know, getting a wastewater operator certified is that 1 year or 2 years experience required before you get certified. And for water, it's you pass the test, grade one or two, and then you're certified. You have to have the experience. Are you factoring that in with...
So we're going to be looking at, typically we survey the journey level, and we're going to look at the education and experience requirements that are called out within the class description, and then we're going to find the comparable within each of the organizations. So the journey level, I mean, I actually, we haven't begun the process yet, so I'm not sure what certifications are required here, but we will get to the bottom of that to try to find that fully competent level within each of those agencies. And there's a threshold sometimes, depending on the grade of the treatment plant and the, you know, the certification then required by the shift operator. We're going to need to figure out, you know, how the operations are similar and what's the right match to make.
Right, because you know, looking at it from the operator, you know, who's looking to maybe get a better job.
Right.
He's looking at the pay. He's not looking at the survey. You know,
right.
He's looking at this is what I make. And I can make this here. May not be as much, but it may be, hey, I'm living in the mountains.
Right.
And so it doesn't necessarily mean you have to, you know, pay a whole lot, but you have to make it worth a while.
It's always difficult to put yourself in the mind of any one employee and making decisions because everyone's going to have a different
right.
criteria that they're going to base their employment decisions on. But
I want to just, if I may, mention what we're doing here. I mean, the point of this exercise is the ultimate result of this, we hope, is going to be a data-based recommendation of a salary and a compensation structure that will consider, I hope, salary as well as possibly benefits.
Correct.
So that we get the picture of how we compare now, what we're doing now, with sort of a platonic view of what what we should be doing, what our best position would be. That doesn't mean all the money. It means it doesn't mean paying cheap because we don't have money. It's not going to be. Then we're going to have to see, can we afford to do that? I mean, but what we don't have at the moment is we've done in-house salary surveys. We've talked to TUD. We've done comparisons. Last time we went through the bargaining unit discussions 3 years or 2.5 years ago, which we're fixing to have to start to do again, we did do a comparison with TUD, and we made quite a few changes based specifically on that because we were losing people to TUD. And so we were trying to at least stanch the bleeding. But that isn't we weren't very scientific about it, okay? I mean, we got some data, and we kind of looked at it internally, and we have concluded as a board that we want to do a proper analysis of this because we have to know what we're up against. We got to understand. Now, then we come up with the issue of how do we pay for that? Can we pay for it? Maybe it'll turn out we're okay. We don't know. What we're doing today, I just want to kind of reiterate, is... this is deferred from a couple of months ago, is trying to approve a list of agencies that we can say, okay, go ahead and use these agencies as comparison for getting the project underway. I mean, that's actually the action item confronting us today. We wanted to make sure that we had questions. Some of them have been answered by different spreadsheets with different numbers on them, which is good. Some things didn't make a lot of sense. That's the purpose. But I just want to emphasize what the ultimate goal of this is: a projection of what a third-party analysis that says this would be probably what we should be looking at for our classification and compensation ranges. And then we, as board with management, have to talk about whether or not do we do that? Do we do better? There's going to be a range, so we have to figure out where we want to put ourselves. That happens after we get the data. So, isn't it?
I'd like to know if Coffin Associates takes into consideration statistics from the Bureau of Labor Statistics on occupational employment statistics for this area.
From time to time, we do present that data as well, not necessarily as a data point, but as a comparison. I've done that for other agencies.
Yeah, they're online, and they show our area here, so I think that's important to understand that they're using that in their formulation of...
So you're talking about cost of living?
No, I'm talking about their wages, occupational employment wages.
Oh.
I think it's limited as to what will match to this work, but we could certainly show it as an aside.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a couple of questions. So you continue to talk about job classifications. Does that also include job descriptions? And if not, who's going to be responsible for doing the actual job descriptions?
So we have not been hired to write the class descriptions. We're assuming that they currently are in place reflecting the work being performed. And that's what we use to make the matches. So okay. We look at the work as described here, and then we go into these other agencies and look at their descriptions and look for 70% comparability.
Okay, and that's on specific job descriptions?
Correct.
As opposed to classifications?
Okay. Well, so a classification is the organization of the work, and the description just basically classifies or describes what that work is. So okay. they're somewhat the same.
Okay, mm-hmm. All right. So on page one of your proposal, that's the list I think that Ms. Crow was referring to, all of the job descriptions that were provided to you by the district. One of them is an operations and maintenance superintendent. So are you going to make a recommendation as to what the cost will be to hire such a person, since you do not have an operations superintendent currently?
So if it's a benchmark, we'll go in, we'll look at the class description, and we'll go to the 12 agencies that have been chosen and find their classification that is at least 70% similar. Some agencies may not have a match, and then we provide that data.
Okay.
And recommend in the range structure that we create where that classification would be paid.
Okay.
And then that's presented to the district to make decisions from.
Okay, and then using the market data and recommended new base compensation structure, will you also recommend how the district's going to support the prospective salary increases and possible benefits packages?
So what we normally do is provide a number of options for implementation. So again, we don't know where you're going to fall. Okay. You could be above, you could be below, you could be okay. We say within 5% up plus or minus is competitive. So we'll have that information, and then we'll say, let's just say you're pretty significantly under market. There's three-year implementation plans. There's a goal of at least getting people in the very bottom step of the new range. There's different ways that you can implement it. And again, the district is going to have to decide, well, maybe market median makes sense or maybe it doesn't for us, and we want to find a different position in the market to pay, depending on what you can afford. So it's presenting options and letting the district make decisions as to what makes sense for them.
Anything else?
I move that we approve the list of competitor agencies to be evaluated in the classification and compensation study being performed by Coffin Associates.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the attached list of comparator agencies, all of them, to be evaluated by Coffin Associates in the classification and compensation session. Is there any further board discussion? Is there any public comment? Public comment is closed. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, so we have approved that list.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Is Gail still there?
Do you know Gail?
Gail?
She is not still there, but we stay in touch with her. She's doing great.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for
okay, moving back now to item 4, the consent calendar. Well, anybody want to call anything?
Yeah,
Remember, we don't have to pull anything off. We can just discuss it and then...
Okay, good.
Okay,
yes.
Just discuss it now. Okay, do we want it? Okay, so payables. Start with that.
Is it possible to... I think I saw it. I was trying to look for it and I couldn't find it. The phone system, the VIA phone system, is that what it's called? We had had that at an old employer that I had worked for some years, and we ended up paying off the lease for, we bought it for $1 and got, and then got rid of the system, got something else in there that was much better. I don't know what our term is with that phone system. I think I heard it wasn't the best, so is that possible to look into?
What's the name of it?
It's a VIA phone system.
Yeah.
You look into another...
system.
Buy a whole new system.
Or whatever, whatever our lease payment is on this.
We can. I know when we had originally looked, when we look at options, we're always going with the most affordable option. However, what's interesting is that the company, so Avaya is the software, it's the actual hardware of the phone.
Right.
The company, ROI, that provided the district with this software just recently went bankrupt. And so their information, now this other company, I've got a, the email just came through like I think last week, they're now, another company is now overseeing the phone system. However, we don't really have like we don't have a maintenance contract with this with the company. So other than that, like you said, it's the lease for it. And I'd have to, we can go back and reevaluate if there's a more viable, more affordable option. We actually did implement another system before the Avaya phone system. It was Blue something. And it was horrible. And it didn't work whatsoever, and so the Avaya was the next step in implementing it. But we are always, I mean, it's been working fine for us, the system itself. So we haven't had any.
My question, how are we?
I know, yeah, the system has been working.
I thought I heard somewhere along the line when it came to, I don't know if it was people calling in, like when we had an outage or something, and find out.
So what happens?
Only one person can call, and then the phone's busy, and the voicemail, you know, I don't know.
Occasionally, because it's an internet VoIP phone system. So it would be like when the internet service goes down, which that is on our AT&T line, because AT&T has been the most reliable. The rest of their districts is on Conifer. But when we tried to originally set it up, Conifer dropped a lot. And so what happens is when the system goes down, which happens very rarely, but it occasionally will happen, as we're all familiar, I'm sure we've all lost our internet connection at some point, it goes back and it defaults to the landline phone number. So we don't have all of the extra lines open.
Right.
We have just the emergency line open. So yes, if people are trying to call in while the phone is down, there's only that one emergency backup hard line with AT&T that then switches over to the phone system. So we've had that happen in the past. Generally, we're in contact with AT&T. They're telling us whatever happened to why the disconnection happened. But we'd really have that with, that's not really the Avaya system, that's the internet provider.
Yeah.
I just, parenthetically, when we switched to the VoIP, one of the reasons we did that was because the landline, the AT&T landline, was enormously expensive.
We saved thousands and thousands of dollars by switching.
I mean,
and then we saved even more thousands of dollars because we switched to another, a different program that's for government agencies. Specifically, so it's several thousand dollars less a month than we were paying with just having phone lines through AT&T.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else on the field?
The refund checks, you've got quite a few this month, and I know you explained it to me last time we were here. The fee schedule that came out that had to do with refund checks, is that concern this? Is it a processing fee, the $30 that these people are going to be charged, or is that something different? Right, last month at the meeting,
that's something different, and we haven't implemented those quite yet because they're now under legal counsel review to make sure that
Oh, the schedule?
Yeah, the schedule's with legal counsel, who's getting, reviewing it to make sure that they're all legal and we can move forward with them. Then we're going to notify all the customers before actually implementing it. So all of these refunds that you see on here, these refund checks, these are because people either have moved out of their house, they had a credit on their bill, they had a deposit at the time. That's all, that it has nothing to do with any of our fee schedules.
Okay, all right, thank you for clarifying. I have a question on that same thing. So if somebody has an $18 credit, are you going to charge them $30 to get their $18 back, or is they're just going to let it ride? You know what I mean?
No, we're just going to refund them. It's the switching of the accounts of the back and forth between
the tenants.
That's where we get the establishment. Okay. It's the processing of a new account, the processing of taking an account and putting it into a tenant's name, taking it out of the tenant's name, putting it back into the, because there's a whole process that's involved with that. We don't charge people to send
them
a refund.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
No.
Okay. That was a little confusing. Thank you so much.
Anything else on payables? All right, well, let's see. So we have minutes, payables, late reading of ordinance. I assume nobody has a question about that. Anything about the easement? So you do have something about
it. No, I have something on that.
It's not there yet.
Okay, well, you get there.
Okay, I'm just running, walking through.
Okay.
Discussion action regarding sending board members to the SDLA conferences. No, and finally, adoption of a resolution approving a revised and updated conflict of interest policy.
There's an error here at the end of the first paragraph. You've got Saddle Creek, and I sure hope we're not going to be in that situation with their Measure A. You might want to change that. I don't know why Saddle Creek. You must have the same thing for Saddle Creek.
Which one is that?
The conflict right here.
When you say the
right here.
I told Jennifer I was going to make a mistake.
That shows.
I'm sorry, and I generally would have caught it, but I was like dying on Friday, so.
Yes, I don't want to get stuck with your Measure A and you up everybody's parcel and then you pay $1,000 a month.
The conflict of interest code has nothing to do with taxes.
Okay, but no, I know that, but it says right there Saddle Creek, and that's what Saddle Creek is known for right now.
They're actually known for beautiful roads. Sorry.
And a big assessment.
Safe for beautiful roads.
What is it?
It's up in Calaveras County.
Where on the document is this? The page?
The second page, the last line of the first paragraph.
It's the last one.
I would recommend a motion with the corrections.
Okay, I'd like to recommend a motion with corrections. Is that how we do it?
No, you want to move this, prove it.
What we'll do is we're going to remove the policy from the consent calendar and discuss that momentarily. So I move that we approve items 4A, B, C, D, and E on the consent calendar. Okay. I'll second. Okay, moving and seconded to approve items 4A, B, C, D, and E on the consent calendar. Any further discussion? Any public comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, so that is approved. So now item 4F. Okay, well, I'm sorry. I read your eyes. So now item 4F. Which we will consider separately, which is an adoption of a resolution approving a revised and updated conflict of interest policy. And I will move that we approve that adopt that resolution with the modification that in the portion of the conflict of interest code where it says Saddle Creek Community Services District, it should say Groveland Community Services. I'll second that. Okay, so it's moved and seconded to adopt this conflict of interest code, which incidentally, I'm just going to say, I'm nice to streamline it like this and just adopt the state's version. Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense. With the modification that it should refer to the Groveland Community Services District in both places, is there any discussion? Any public comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, so we have now approved all of the items that were on the consent calendar. It means that we have incidentally approved that resolution unanimously. Old business, there appears to be none. Item 6, discussion action items. Administer oath of office to newly appointed as if the elected board members. As if, you could have said in lieu.
Is that all of us? Is that all of us?
This is all of you. And so for ease, so I have to do it over and over again, because I don't know how long my voice is going to last. What I'm going to do is, you only have to say your name once. So I'm going to say, repeat after me, and I'm going to say, I, and I'm going to start with Nancy, and Nancy will say, Nancy, Maura, and then Janice will say, then so on and so forth and so forth. And then after that, I will say a statement that you will all repeat at the same time in unison. Is that clear?
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Absolutely.
You buy me?
I'm not that big.
No!
Okay. Please raise your right hand. I,
Nancy Maura,
Janice Korkowski,
Robert Swan, John Armstrong,
Spencer Edwards,
Do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the State of California. Against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That I will bear true faith and allegiance. To the Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the State of California. That I take this obligation freely. Without any mental reservation. Or purpose of evasion. And that I will well and faithfully. Discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter. Beautiful. Okay.
Yeah.
And sir,
I object to this marriage.
We will have to end there.
I object to this marriage.
Okay. So we are all elected in lieu.
I knew that was
coming. You got to do Form 700.
Thank you, yes. I did clarify with the county elections office that you all will have to do a new Form 700.
Did I give you mine?
You did. I have yours, and it has to be within 30 days of appointment.
Okay.
So can you give us those forms?
I will email you the forms.
You get them online.
So we don't have to do one. First of the year, right?
And you will not have to do one in April.
Right. Okay.
Well,
you don't have to do
a manual one.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
I'm really excited about having the same board.
All right. Moving on to item 6B, adoption of a resolution amending the district informal bidding ordinance and establishing a public hearing for its adoption.
Mr. President, this is actually considered a first reading of this ordinance procedurally, this amended ordinance that's been in place since the district adopted the Uniform Construction Cost Accounting Act. This is something that has not been used a lot over the years, the procedures for informal bidding. It has been used for some internal force account, what's called force account projects, where we've had our staff do the work. But this applies to, as you can see, the way that we put together our information about qualified contractors under the public contract code, and that we notify them. And the main change to the notification part of it is that we've added email, because in the past it was always mailed notice. Email is the preferred way that we notify the bidders of the project under an informal bid situation. Formal bids are completely different, but on the informal bidding, it's we'll have the list of contractors. They will provide us their email address, and we'll send it to them by email. And then the clarification of this that needed to be made, because it was unclear. There were two different paragraphs that said different things on page 3 of the ordinance. The general manager of the district is authorized to award informal contracts pursuant to this section. That was the existing language. And then in legal counsel's review, they made recommendations on how to modify that second paragraph for clarity and consistency, because it allowed me to award a contract, but then at the same time in that second paragraph, it was unclear whether that came back to the board or not.
Yeah.
Once I've awarded the contract. And if I award a contract to a contractor pursuant to an informal bid process, and then it comes back to the board and the board says no, then the contractor could claim that all of their bid costs and all of their efforts to put together the bids and that they were due that just compensation that was awarded by the general manager, who is authorized to do it. So anyway, the clarification here is that at the time provided in the notice inviting informal bids, general manager shall open all bids timely received and award a contract to the lowest responsible bidder. If two or more bids are the same and lowest, the general manager may choose the contractor to whom the contract is to be awarded. It doesn't ever happen that you get two same bids, but I guess it could. And this would be informal bid projects, so they're going to be less than the $200,000 maximum. And they are going to be projects, I'm not going to go out to informal bid and award a contract for something that's not contained within the budget. And we've already talked about and approved that project in your capital budget schedule. Otherwise, if there was a project that was not included in the capital budget schedule, I would amend the budget schedule first to include the project before I went to informal bid. In other words, I'd never go to informal bid on a project that you didn't already have
right.
the time to consider.
Because if you go back and amend the budget, we do that.
Right. Yeah. And the main thing to understand here is that there's not the district doesn't have the ability to go out and choose contractors. We don't have the ability under state law to go out and just pick the contractors that we want, or the general manager can't go out and build a relationship with a contractor and only give work to that contractor in accordance with the public contract code and these requirements. We have to go through this process for any project that is used to be over $45,000. I'd have to look at what the new... It still may be the same number on the low end. 60,000.
Yeah.
Anything over 60,000 has to go out to this informal bidding process, and we have to award the contract to the lowest bidder that meets all of the qualifications and submits a bid that meets the requirements that we've asked for. So this is primarily clarification and to make it clear to me what's expected by the board, and it's been reviewed by council, and this was their recommendation. Okay. Also, to take out the limits in this, where we had a numerical limit, and just refer again to the.
So they changed the law.
Right, as they update that every 5 years.
So I got one, not so much grammatical, but structural thing on the notice inviting formal biz on page 3.
Mm-hmm.
You deleted the language that refers to the California Uniform Construction Cost Accounting Commission, but then you subsequently, in the subparagraph 1, refer to the commission. So someplace you've got to actually say which commission you're talking about.
Ah, yeah. Mm.
Right, that's the only place that was mentioned, that the commission is spelled that. Well,
I mean, there's lots of commissions. You've got to say, you've got to identify.
Well, it spells it out in the very first paragraph, but it doesn't put it in parentheses. Okay, yeah, I got you.
Or put commission, you know, do the parentheses.
Up in the beginning, yeah, got it.
It has it in the section 4.
Oh, it does have it. It's page 1. So you could just put this slip. Just add commission in parens there, so.
Yeah, and it also, doesn't it have it on page 2 as well? California Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Commission?
Yeah, it does. I find it.
That's a good catch, though.
I know what you mean. If we just did it the first time that it was spelled out in section 2,
yes,
and just put the
word commission.
Commission.
That would be
easy. Yeah.
Does that work for you? Okay, all right.
Is there any board discussion? I think it's really a good idea to, you know, anything where we're subject to state law or state regulation, if we can manage to do it all by reference so that we don't have to update some of the whole time.
Just keep a current copy of the state law.
I move... to adopt.
Let me just jump in real quick. Sorry. Because it procedurally, I had initially agendized this as a resolution, but the motion would be recommended to be approval or adoption of a first reading of this ordinance instead of a resolution approving.
Okay, since there is no actual resolution.
Okay, so a reading then.
Yeah, first reading.
Okay, I move to adopt the first reading of the...
Sorry, John, do we need to set a date for the public hearing at the same time?
You can set it with an upcoming regular meeting, if you'd like.
I mean, do we need to make that as part of the motion? Or can we just say we're going to have...
Establish a public hearing. Because we can't have it effective until we have the public hearing and have the time to advertise it. So
is the January meeting in time? Can we get that done in time?
I don't know. With the timelines for the newspaper and all that. If we just said we'll do it in conjunction with a regular board meeting, schedule a public hearing in conjunction with a regular meeting, then people can count on it occurring with a regular meeting.
Okay.
And they'll just have to watch the agenda.
Okay, so I move that we approve the first reading of the resolution amending the district's informal bidding ordinance and establish a public hearing for its adoption to be heard at a regular meeting.
And I'll second that motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the first reading of what I guess is ordinance number 1-19. You're going to call it that?
Sure.
And to establish a secondary hearing for that, which will occur at a regular meeting that can be properly scheduled. Notifications. Is there any further board discussion? Any public comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, so that motion is unanimously approved. And then we move on to an adoption of a resolution rescinding the existing district's claims policy and approving a new claims policy.
Director Edwards, you asked last month or some other time, maybe it was in a meeting, when we were going to be amending some policies.
Yeah.
Or updating some policies.
Here we go.
Well, yeah, we've been working on them little by little, but we're we're kind of starting with those that have been giving us the most trouble in implementation. I have to say the board did an exhaustive job when they adopted this operating policy and procedures manual back in 2010. There have been a number of small updates since that point, but I'm very familiar with the content and layout and language of this this large policy manual because I have spent a lot of time with the attorney that helped write it, and I know the way that they work and the different districts that I'm familiar with have adopted various versions of these policies. This claims policy has been one that has been of particular interest just because it's so detailed and so lengthy and is in many cases repeating the law and repeating the law that's occasionally changed, and we don't always, because we don't have an attorney on staff and we don't have our attorney review our policies each and every year, sometimes these things go on with changes in the law that don't get reflected in the policy, and also case law and different things that happen over the years that can result in an amended policy. So I've listed the policy included in the packet, the language that is actually the policy that we have and the ordinance that we have. And it's recommended, this came from legal counsel, that both of those be rescinded and then that a new policy in a different format be adopted. It accomplishes the same thing. We're not changing the process of claims. In other words, we're not saying all claims are denied automatically or any of that. It's actually a much simpler process that he's recommended and that's included in the draft resolution. But it's much simpler to follow. The process is much simpler to follow. The reason I say that is the biggest concern on the part of legal counsel was that our current process is so detailed that if we miss any steps, we could be stepping on our own feet when it comes to if something ever went to court and we didn't follow it specifically and exactly, that there could be a problem. And there's no reason to have it that detailed. If it gets that complicated, it should be in legal counsel's hands anyway, because we would be fumbling with things that might be a legal matter that they need to be concerned about in protecting the district.
I was going through, may I speak?
Sure.
Okay. I was going through this, and there's a lot of do's and don'ts for the employee on the ground out there. You know, what he or she should and shouldn't say. Is it possible for us to make like a 3x5 card set, put it on the dashboard of a car, of the cars, you know, and say, you know, the reason I say this is because when I worked for the district, I got bit by a dog, you know, and that's a serious thing for the district, you know, what's going to happen now, you know, and nobody knows what to say, nobody, you know, better than that. Nobody knows what not to say, which is just as important. So maybe as we're developing this, maybe a little card set that could be on the dashboard or in the glove compartment of every vehicle, so that if an employee is out there and something happens, they have something to reference to so that they don't put themselves in jeopardy or the district in jeopardy or make a promise that we can't keep, or something along those lines, and offer the necessary assistance to somebody, a customer that's hurt, you know, those kind of things. I don't know. You think that's overkill, or?
It's not a bad idea, I don't think, but it really has nothing to do with adopting the resolution, because the administration could, or management could easily, I mean,
okay.
Come on to synopsis.
Yes, good point. Absolutely.
It's a good idea, but it, yes.
It's like really outside of the good idea.
In the employee handbook.
could well be. I think one of the, it seems a little weird to have these things here that say, don't say this, don't say that. Yeah. But the reason that it's there is because that way we're specifically telling employees not to do that. So if they do, they're outside their scope of work, and the district is not liable just because they said something. Sorry, but that's the case. We don't want to put in a position where somebody can inadvertently bind the district to something that they're not really legally able to do. And that's the reason, silly as it looks, that's why those portions are in here, I'm pretty sure.
It is. I thought it was silly at the same time, but hearing you repeat that, I understand the thought process behind it.
It's defining the scope of authority that people have to make promises on behalf of the district. Mm-hmm. And they don't. It doesn't mean that the people don't necessarily have a claim. It just means that nobody's authorized to just, to say, yeah, we'll take care of it. No, I can't say that.
Well, and it's very relevant because we've had lots of incidences where
the customer calls,
and it's not like they get caught off guard and they're trying to be helpful, but they don't know what to say, and then we get the person that calls and says, well, your person told me this, and your person told me that, and your person told me this, and so that's why this, don't do this, and only do this, and it's going to take training for,
having little cards is probably not a good idea.
And maybe having the emergency card.
Because you're in this conversation. Tell them to leave that as a list, and they just pull it up on their little tablet.
This is a fine simplification. Streamlining it, the old process, as you say, has an awful lot of specific stuff in it.
That's not good.
It doesn't need to be that specific.
I think we'll retain the some of the forms in format as procedure, internal procedure, just because we may use some variation of those. But they don't need to be a draft letter doesn't need to be in your policy.
Yes,
it's a draft, an application doesn't need to be in your policy. Let me just make clear that when you go to section 106.8, the items 1 through 4, those dollar amounts, legal counsel is not recommending a certain amount, and it's not in law. This is at the board's discretion. So if you're uncomfortable with the $50,000 amount, then you can make adjustments to that. Basically this is how it came to me, and it sounded reasonable for this purpose.
What's your paragraph again, sir?
106.8.
After the initial investigation of the claim may be accepted by the general manager if the claim is $50,000 or less, or by the board if the claim of more than $50,000. Okay, so $50,000 or less, general manager, $50,000 or more goes to the board, deemed denied by operational law. If it just sits there, we don't respond to it after 45 days. Denied by the general manager if the claim is $50,000 or less. So accepted or denied by the general manager at $50,000 or less, and then it goes to the board over that.
I'm assuming that anything that was even close to $50,000, you'd be referring to SBRI anyhow.
If I'm going to look at that the deductible amount as, if it's a known amount and it's really close to the deductible, I'll have a decision to make.
Yeah.
But if it's double the deductible amount or something that could mount up, and we don't want to get SDRMA in hot water, we don't want to have the cost go up because we do something wrong, it's better to have them handle these things. They have the procedures and people in place to help us out.
That's why we pay for the insurance.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so two things. Typographical error, 106.10, EG and attorney.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Where is that? I'm sorry.
Just
on the first line, it says there's a parenthesis.
And attorney.
It says EG and attorney. And I think they call that and attorney.
And what is the number of the resolution?
This will be 41. This is where I numbered it on Friday, and then I...
Okay, so 41-18?
Yes.
So we're now, we are discussing resolution
41-18.
Is there any public comment?
You don't expect every employee to read this whole thing. I mean, if they're, I'm sure like in a meeting, when Louis has a meeting going in, they can just say, don't volunteer any information and just keep reiterating that. You don't, you're not going to give this to each employee, right?
I could, but I've had this conversation with the employees already because we do a lot of service calls.
Yeah.
And we said we never promise, we never,
right.
You know, we don't put ourselves in a hole that we can't get out of or we have to get out of because you just bonded us in something, so.
Okay, it's just real voluminous, so I didn't know if they're all going to, you know, basically get it. Don't follow.
What difference does it make?
What difference does it make? Well, I just wanted to say if it was discussed in the meeting, then they know.
It is, training is a management business.
Yeah.
Function, and I'm sure that they've got that.
They will know about all these laws.
Okay. Any other public comments?
No.
That's the plan.
Okay. so I'll move that we adopt resolution 41-18 with the typographical error on page 106.10.
A second.
Okay. Moved and seconded to adopt resolution 41-18 with one typographical error fix. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? So we have unanimous approval of resolution 41-18, which is item 6C. Item 6B is to review. Yes, I know, I'm just trying to review of and board direction on recommended wastewater ordinance sections to be amended in the 2019
typo
update. Okay.
Me. I'm Mr. M. King typo today.
Sir, SE4 versus?
No, what's that?
On paragraph 1, background services.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one's not important because it's on your memorandum right there.
Yeah, it's important to me. I don't know. I spent more time in the ordinance review. Let me just, this is a carry forward from the prior board meetings. It probably could have gone on old business if we want to hear it there in the future. But this was an initial review of our existing ordinance to make the board aware of the sections that we were intending to move forward with changes on or consideration of. It's pretty much every section. I went section by section in the wastewater ordinance update review part of this staff report. What I did is I looked at our ordinance and taking public comment and taking the board's comments to this point, as well as our experience internally with implementing that ordinance. And then also, on another two screens, I have the ordinances that I have made updates on in the past with other districts, and also just really good ordinances of other agencies that had good provisions to make sure that we were not just addressing what we had in our ordinance, but then also looking beyond to see what other people are, just to make sure that we're taking care of everything. And so I've addressed that a little bit in this report. And I guess, you know, rather than me going through each and every section, I'd like to just highlight a couple major changes that would be proposed. Article 4, that's Roman numeral 4, private sewers. There is... throughout this ordinance, there was reference to certain fees in dollar amounts. Again, ordinances are expensive and cumbersome to update in themselves, and normally you would have an ordinance that referred to an attached fee schedule that was adopted by resolution. Okay, So that would be the way that we would proceed with preparing this. All of the miscellaneous fees, all of the monthly fees, all everything else would be included in that resolution. We'd be dealing with it each year around budget time, typically, or when there were changes in rates. And then also, we don't have a section in our current ordinance that deals with private sewers, private laterals, the privately owned component of the sewer system that runs from the main to the home. When the sanitary sewer management plan regulations came into effect, it was probably required, but whatever. We don't have a section in there that delineates what's under private ownership of that system and what the responsibilities are with regard to its condition. And what happens is you'll have a failed lateral. Somebody goes in and they'll, you know, put a yard drain in it, or they'll do something weird with it, or they'll have installed it incorrectly, or they'll break a hole in it and don't know it. Pretty soon it's getting all kinds of mud and roots and rocks, and then you will be camera in the main and you'll see roots and it's coming from a lateral over here. We have to have regulations in effect to mandate that repairs and improvements be made on those, because they can affect our sewer, and there's no excuse. You know, if a chunk of roots falls off of somebody's private lateral, gets into our system, plugs it up, overflows a manhole into Pine Mountain Lake, is our fault. You know, so.
In the Bay Area, every time a home is sold, it's usually a city ordinance.
Yeah.
You have to have it inspected. It has to.
Yep.
Camera video has to
yep.
be sent to the city inspector, and they review it. And
yep.
if you pass, you pass. If you don't, it has to be repaired before the home is sold. So
good.
Is that something that we can do?
We certainly can. This section would be where we would do that. I can tell you that industry-wide, was the norm in the beginning when people amended their ordinance to put that in place. They had that requirement I don't know whether it came from the State Water Board or who, but almost everybody that adopted them had that in it, and most of them could not enforce it because you couldn't get the title companies to recognize it. So all of a sudden you had a new owner and you're saying, wait, you can't. You know, you where's your inspection? Oh, I didn't get it done. Oh, they didn't disclose it. And then it became a big hassle. So a lot of entities just had it in their requirements but backed off on it. In fact, when I revised the ordinance at TUD to add that in, and in Twain Hart to add that section in, we had the Realtors Association come in and want to really discourage the district from adopting that because of the difficulty, and obviously it's going to affect their sales and everything else. They'll lose sales over it in many cases. And so it was dummied back in the TUD ordinance. And many entities have dummied it back a little bit where it's if you discover a problem, you know, if we discover a problem during routine maintenance, or if there's an unusual amount of INI and you can identify closely where it was, you know, we have the ability to say everybody in this block has to do a test, you know. I appreciate the interest in that section. We don't have it currently. That will probably be one of the hotter topics of this whole ordinance. So.
Okay. As far as I know, all the cities in the Bay Area are still requesting that. When we started years ago, we were responsible for doing that. I mean, so I don't know why it would not be. I mean, I don't know. Is it just a rural thing that people are getting away with it?
It's the pressure is going to come from the real estate community primarily. They're going to say, you know, you're going to lose us all these deals, and you're just dreaming, and we can't get contractors up here, and You know, it's like the septic regulations. You know, those have always created controversy because you've got to get your septic inspected. Well, now, on the other side, you got to get your sewer inspected. I'm 100% in favor of it.
Yeah.
It's easier for us to administer that we've got to have this inspection report, and then we're done. We don't have to worry about them for years.
And it goes into her
electronic
file.
This is great. This isn't the final ordinance. If I'm getting preliminary input and some head nods, because if it comes out and it's, I just don't want to surprise the board with the first version of it that says something that's completely crazy to you. So how does do we want to look at that first in our first revision language, and then we can always back off from that?
I like that idea because it gives us a chance to look at the laterals when they're being sold, when the houses are being sold. Implementing it through the county is going to be a little bit difficult because I know my experience, they tend to overlook things and forget things. We used to put ordinances for driveways and things like that, and we'd go out there to make the first inspection to find that they didn't do anything that we asked them to do. That's typical county. So, but I like the idea. I think we could put it in there and see what happens. You know, we can always back off if we have.
There's things you could do. We could put it in with as a requirement, and could say, well, unless it has been done in the last 5 years, in the last 4 years, or something like that. So, mm-hmm. if somebody, you know, buys a house and then suddenly discovers that they can't afford it or something like that and has to unload it, and then you stick them with having to do it again. I can see the turnover issue could be a matter. And we shouldn't enforce more than what we need to guarantee that our sewers are in good shape.
I think the cost to have ours inspected was like $80 for the videogram, and then we dropped it off at the...
Yeah, well, that's because you get plumbers in cities that are right there.
But I have seen in this district houses actually put their gutters into the sewer.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's prohibited.
Oh, yeah.
That's
where we would catch
it. It's already prohibited. Right.
That'll come out in the inspection report.
Things like that. So,
that's clearly going to be a matter of contention.
Yeah.
We can assume that we'll be hearing from...
But the good thing is, as John has said, it's something we can back off of a little bit.
Okay, so right now what we're looking at is this is really just a summary of where you're thinking that the things that are going to be considered in the changes.
Exactly.
And how you're going about making determinations about these things.
Right. Some of it is legal, some is administrative office, some's general manager and everybody else. And again, one of the things that precipitated this review was the special flat rate for significant irrigation requirements.
That's
I love saying that. I'm going to come up with an acronym for it.
SFRFL.
Superfly.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's what Article 7, Paragraph 2. Didn't we have that young gentleman come in here and talk about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's something that we are, in all reality, I understand that we need to just raise that up, look at it. If there is a need to set a minimum and there's a valid rationale and it hasn't been challenged in court and we think it's a good idea, then that'll be our recommendation. In reality, normally when you have I say base rate and variable rate, but I know we use different terminology here, but you have the base rate that you pay monthly, whether you use anything or not, and then you have an add-on for the water usage on the wastewater side. Normally, the goal is to have every fixed cost, everything that needs to be fixed in that base rate that you pay, whether you use it or not, and then everything that happens when you turn on the faucet and it goes down a fixture, be charged in that per gallon rate. Okay, so under that scenario, I'm not sure why we would have a fixed floor for that, or why we would say 3,100 gallons, because if it's a matter of that's the level of work that it takes to basically provide the capacity and everything, we may want to have we may want to consider having all of those costs in the base rate and then just reevaluating that variable and the fixed base rate.
I think the my view on that one is that the since we base our special flat rate for significant landscape irrigation, our winter averaging rate on a 3-month average. I think one of the reasons this may be in there with a minimum is there are some people who just aren't here for those 3 months, and so they could easily have a very, very low rate, and then when they are here during the summer, they would not have any variable component at all. I'm just taking an extreme example. So I think probably one of the reasons that that might have been stuck in there in the first place was to look out for that sort of thing. Another way to look at it would be to say when they're signing up for the program that you attest, among other things, to the fact that you're actually there during the period of time that you're evaluating your winter averaging rate, and then see if they are. I don't know. I think that's why there is a number. The 3,100, I think, is a little high, and we do charge like a cent and a half per gallon on the sewer or something like that. So I say it's a little high. I don't have any landscaping. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, during the whole time I've been living here, I would probably use something like 500 gallons a month, for one person. So 3,100, if you were charging me 3,100, base, I'd be pretty good.
I've been seeing a lot of information on people shutting their water off during the winter, the pipestone burst, especially if they're not going to be here for 3, 4, 5 months. Are we charging those people 3,100 gallon minimum?
If they've signed up, yes. That's part of the stipulation, that they understand that even if, and a lot of them are part-time people or sewer, because in the summertime they'll come up and they'll use a lot of gallons when it's family and this and that,
right.
So it's kind of an averaging out of that, because they're still only charged 3,100 gallons when they could be technically using 12,000 for the month.
So why would we let them sign up for it to be charged 3,100?
Well, ostensibly they have a lot of landscaping.
Just because they have a lot of
landscaping. So their water doesn't go into the sewer. And we charge them for the water.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
So that my recommendation would be that we stay with the same type of having some type of minimum that's based on the average winter water consumption. That we verify as people that are there year-round and all that. And that we state our methodology in the ordinance. That's the main thing, is that we state the rationale that we use.
And I think one of the things that you're proposing to do is to sort of make an analysis of what will be the financial impact of doing this or not doing it or whatever, which we should consider, John, I'm sorry.
Also, I mean, we're going to confirm that they have the landscaping to support the winter averaging too.
Yes,
so I mean, that as long as that's in there, and we have to prove that you got to show us. I mean, you go to my house, it's obvious I'm not watering. I mean, it's just natural landscape. I water my trees once in a while, but so as long as that's in there, and it's up to the general manager, I think it's good.
All right. So the next interesting item is the standby fee. It's on the very next paragraph there under Article 7. We have a provision in there for a standby fee that is to be charged to all vacant parcels with a service stub. Mm-hmm. And do we charge that?
Yes, we do. $2.
How much is it?
$2 a month.
So a vacant lot is getting a bill?
A vacant lot that has been stubbed for sewer is getting a $2 bill, yes.
I can attest to that because we paid it for 30 years.
Wow. I don't.
It costs you
okay.
$60.
I just will just need to, all I just need to go back and.
Yeah. Times 12 times 30.
Yeah.
We'll need to look at that and make sure that it was when it was adopted and how it all functions. That's all. Just because it. Prop 218 looks at them a little bit differently, and I don't know if this has been in place since the beginning. That would be fantastic. And it sounds like it has been.
Yeah.
At $2?
At least one person's been paying it.
I could have swore at one point during that time frame went up to 2.25, but Jennifer would actually know what more, no more than I do what the current. Maybe it was 175 way back then. She wasn't even born in 86 when we bought this lot.
I was
wrong
for a year.
Same thing with my oldest son.
Yeah, I'm thinking, wow.
So, what do we want to do? Not charge people for that?
No, I was just wanting to bring it up there because, you know, my recommendation is that we would add provision in the ordinance that mandated the creation of standby fees for any new development projects over a parcel map. In other words, it's got to be a subdivision. It doesn't make a lot of sense for four units. You know, if somebody's just doing a parcel map or splitting a parcel or something. But if it's a subdivision of five lots or more, then it makes sense to have to require the developer to do the engineering study, to create an assessment that's mandatory on those vacant parcels when they're created, so that in the event that somebody does a 20-unit subdivision and then they sell two lots and those people connect and they're on the far end of the sewer system and we got all this pipe that is going through and you only have two connections, that doesn't pay for the cost of operating that system. So adopting a standby fee as a norm, and it has to be, according to Prop 218 now, it has to be done by an engineer's study. You have to have an engineer's report that says what the level of that standby fee needs to be. That seemed to make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
I think this is a good summary of the issues.
Good.
You know, I think we all have probably I'm on record as wishing that we didn't have a volume charge at all. I come from a city. I would just assume that you just pay your sewer bill on a fixed rate, but that isn't how we have decided to go. So we have a variable charge. So my main concern is that it'd be fair. I mean, the whole point of this stuff is that you should pay for water that actually goes into the sewer system to the best of our ability to figure that out. Because charging people twice for water that doesn't go into the sewer system is kind of.
They're not fair.
And sewer meters don't work.
No. Well, they, yes.
Do they exist?
Yeah, they do.
And then they clog.
Flow meters, they're typically mag meters, so they have an electronic signal, or they're ultrasonic. And very, very expensive and have to be cleaned all the time.
And calibrated.
Yeah.
This is a very good chair, isn't it?
Anyway.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so we adopted a schedule. We'll try to stick to it. If we get off the schedule, there certainly will be reasons why, but I want you to know that it's extensive. And the other thing was the accessory dwelling unit. There's been a lot of regulations about that. And those need to be weaved in through this whole thing because people are converting their garage, converting their sheds into rental Airbnb rental units, but they're using the accessory dwelling unit regulations to do it. So in other words, it looks like a granny house until it goes on Airbnb.
Yeah.
Is that legal?
No.
Yeah.
No.
You know, I hear, there's a lot of people buying houses. Say, I heard of next door, one owner was complaining that they had bought so many houses, and they were complaining about something, and they were turning them into Airbnbs, bed and breakfasts. Mm-hmm. That seems like a violation of what Pine Mountain Lake, you know, is all about, and you know, if it's an Airbnb, if they're renting it out, doesn't that make it kind of commercial?
Yes.
I mean, what's going on here? I mean, should we be looking into that a little bit more closely?
Well, no, it's PML, though. I mean, SPML's got a big issue.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's our sewer line and our water line. I mean, don't we, I don't mind if they do that, but...
It's probably outside of our
is it outside of our scope?
Probably outside of our jurisdiction.
I understand.
Worry about how someone is using it.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to go in there and make their house a bed and breakfast and make it commercial and make money off of it, well, then it's commercial. And don't we charge differently for commercial than we do for residential?
Yeah, we do.
We do. I knew that. That was a rhetorical question. So
I understand what you're saying.
We should be charging these people, and I think it's more. Isn't it?
So long as we're doing a volume thing, they do get charged, because... Okay. Some people will have 12, 13, 14 people living in that house over a weekend or the week of 4th of July.
Yeah.
Well, their water bill has to be outrageous.
Outrageous,
since they're going to be charged for having 12.
So that's where we make up the difference on that.
Well, I don't know. But...
Yeah. Okay.
And vacation rental is basically the same as an Airbnb. It's the same thing. And you might end up with a vacation rental right next door to you.
I do.
So, I mean, so... We're not limiting those.
Okay,
know.
All right. I just wanted to throw that out there for discussion.
It's either outside our jurisdiction or it's outside our competence to be able to figure it out.
Okay.
We don't really have any way to tell.
They're registered.
The expense also, the commercial difference in rate
is supposed to be.
Mostly for businesses like
Transdoor,
things that are bringing a lot of different type of sewage to our system. And a house with a lot of people...
It's just more of the same.
It's more of the same.
Okay.
Sorry. So I think that's one thing that I am just going to add to my notes that I hadn't considered before, is that when we deal with the accessory dwelling units and property uses, that we're going to require notification when an application has been submitted to the county for to permit I don't know what they call it, transient rental or whatever, an Airbnb or whatever, so that we, and our requirements would be that we're notified that they have a GCSD Airbnb or whatever permit, so there would be a counter permit, counterpart from us and a fee associated with that. But it would be primarily just so that if we want to run a report for water usage for all Airbnbs, that we can look those up and we can see what those are and look at specifically at those trends and see if there's an issue. And also, if we notice problems at a lift station of increased, products, because the owner has absolutely no control over what's going on there, then that's our ability to be able to monitor it and control it a little bit.
You can also revoke their inter-averaging if they happen to be on lower average.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's why when we revised it in the first place, because so many people were abusing it, and it was a lot of vacation rentals that were benefiting from the low average, and then the summertime they'd run it out.
Yes. No,
that's when we started doing the actual inspection and everything else.
On their deck.
Yeah.
That's all they had.
That's a lot. It takes a lot of water.
Just kind of one other thing when we're talking about the people that are having all these renters and stuff, because especially like, okay, we're not in a drought right now, but we're always just a year away from it. And us as homeowners, and I know there's that 2013 goal or percentage that we're always supposed to stick to. So I think pretty much all of us, if we're decent stewards of our properties, are conscious of that. And we try not to waste water and just... You can be guaranteed those 12 renters don't give a rat's behind
we had
how much water they're
you know, 14 people, you know, or, you know, if they want to take a 30-minute shower there. So if it ever came to a time where we really were in our conserving phase again, to where otherwise we're going to get penalized because we're not at that standard, I think we should be looking at the people who are renting, because if the district is going to get penalized, if that is kind of what's making it is skewing us, it might be something that we look at.
We spent quite a bit of time back during 2014 arguing about change to the drought ordinance, and ultimately didn't, because we were able to get compliance just by calling people up and shaming them to a reasonable extent. But there's certainly, that's another thing that needs to be reviewed. Our current drought ordinance is a bit.
Our what ordinance?
Drought ordinance. The segment of the water ordinance that pertains to drought is probably not really adequate for an actual drought situation. So that's another topic. But yeah. Yes, ma'am?
I would just like to speak back to the TOT tax for Airbnb specifically. Airbnb doesn't allow a property owner to avoid paying those TOT taxes, and the funds come directly from Airbnb to Tuolumne County, so the way Tuolumne County is set up. However, there is a one-time fee in registration if you're opening an actual bed and breakfast business, and that would really be the only way to access a list would be those that have actually paid for an actual Airbnb, a bed and breakfast lodging facility, is my understanding. Because when I went in to do it for my property, I didn't have to pay a one-time licensure fee, and Airbnb says that
Airbnb is just really a rental service.
Exactly. So in order for you to find a list from the county of the people who are registered as Airbnb, I don't know how the county would be able to help with that. I don't know if they would be able to supply.
Well,
I don't know if that's helpful or hurtful.
No, it's a good point. That's why we are going to permit accessory dwelling units. In other words, you know, we can't go back. We could, but it would be difficult to go back and say, that looks like it could be rented out. But going forward, as we see permits for a game room that has a kitchen, and it's, you know, it's a conversion of a garage, it's two levels, it's could sleep 14, you know, and all that, it's going to have a permit process through us, and it'll trigger us to review water usage and other things, and there'll be an annual fee associated with it so that we can see if that's occurring. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, you're talking more people on the street, you know, and different things, but it is a concern just because it can be a burden on regular customers. I did miss one thing that might be controversial, and I want to just make sure I highlight it, is that our current ordinance allows for a reduced connection fee for government and nonprofits. That is, I don't know how we would do that in compliance with law, because you have to set your connection fees according to a capital improvement program or a study that says that you need this amount of money to do these improvements, and there's a per unit value to that. If you're providing a discount to somebody, it's like giving a developer a discount to develop. You know, you would have to have a rationale. In other words, we're going to give you a 60% reduced connection fee because you're going to build something for us. Or something. We can't just arbitrarily throw out a 60% or a 40% discount.
I don't see what's controversial about that.
It is because people that whoever lobbied for that obviously was pretty passionate about it. You don't see it very often, but it might have been like a beautification project, you know, Chamber of Commerce thing, something. I don't know.
Could have been the Little House.
Does that mean if Groveland Ranger District for the Forest Service goes into Pine Mountain Lake and rents a house and puts four fur-faced firefighters in there, and do we give them a discount?
If they owned it, the property, yeah, it would be under this.
But they rent it, they don't.
If they had
if they made a connection. I mean, we don't, the connection fee is a connection fee, right?
Yeah, so they built a...
It's what it's built. It's yeah. new construction. It's
new construction. Okay. New construction. Okay. I misunderstood. I'm sorry.
Aren't there businesses in town that are nonprofit agencies like Helping Hands?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how would this affect them?
If they were just coming into town and they bought a building.
Right.
And
yeah. Plus, we don't own the building. We rent it.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Our landlord pays.
Right.
He owns
right.
the property.
But again, connection fees only put connection.
Letter
cast
riddle
the
yeah.
first connection.
Right. Letter goes
half
town.
Okay.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
I've seen this request typically come from like you know, Chamber of Commerce or business, downtown business owners association or something that wants to do a beautification project or a public bathroom or something,
right.
and. They don't. They can't pay the $13,000 connection fee. Or, you know, ours is
okay, so
less
with
than
the, that. With the water plan going into Big Oak Flats, the water connection, in, they will be able to build in town, correct? So we have a possibility of new businesses coming into that end of our district.
It's certainly possible.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. So. This is something that would affect anything coming into Big Oak Flats.
It's non-profit.
Non-profit government, yeah.
Non-profit government.
Okay.
And Pete's point is that we really can't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that is really kind of a violation of
probably
other things as well.
Yeah. Along with what Janice is saying is, I do believe when those water lines get improved into Big Oak Flat, we will see some development there,
yeah.
which is good.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Really good.
We also...
Yes, ma'am.
Good.
Any idea what the cost is going to be to the district? Because you've got the district engineer and then legal counsel looking at phases of this ordinance. Any idea what that's going to cost?
We'll do it within budget, within our current budget, but I would say probably
$10,000. Okay.
Between the two.
Okay.
I mean, so the majority of the effort's on our part. I mean, we'll be throwing a paragraph here and there. If we need, you know, the board will know about it if we need any significant a rate study entity to look at something or anything else. But for the most part, it's going to be pretty straightforward.
Okay. Any other discussion on this matter? Okay. Quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so having done E already, we'll move on to item 6F, approval of the scope of work schedule and consultant selection process for the completion of the 2019 Integrated Water and Wastewater Master Plans.
Can you tell we have a little bit of work going on here lately?
Yeah.
The master plan was something I really wanted to get to you earlier, but it has taken a little bit of time to get this together. And again, a request for proposals is similar to going out for bid. You're requiring the consultants to prepare a proposal that takes time and effort. And there's an expectation at the end of it that you're going to award a contract to someone for some reason. So within that document, you have to be clear what you're expecting them to provide. And also what how you're going to go about awarding the contract. Because it's a consultant contract, there's no requirement for low bidder. It's not like a construction contract. You're hiring a professional for their expertise in this area. The last time the district did a master plan was in 2001. We did a water and wastewater master plan. If you'll remember, that was prior to some pretty major development projects, and you know, there was a lot of growth going on in the community. There was a lot of interest in other developments. It's a different time now. We also have conservation and different things, but it is time to put this together. It's in front of the board because it's a very important document that details our future. Just like the compensation study that we talked about earlier today. This is going to come forward with some recommendations about improvements to our system and maintenance procedures and capital investments that will serve as the basis for future fees. It'll serve as the basis for connection fees, you know, for new development projects and vacant lots. And it will serve as a basis for a lot of decisions of management and the board for its life, you know, for whatever life expectancy. I wouldn't say we want to go out another 18 years on it, but usually, you know, 10 years or if there's another trigger point to update these things. So I put together, based on my review of dozens of master plans for both water and wastewater, some planning objectives, which would be just the basic background, a scope of work of what the consultant would be putting together, would be expected to do. And again, in a consulting master plan environment, we're not the experts, they are.
Right.
So I can't tell them in this, I could, but I'd probably be wrong, how do we evaluate things and what individual, whether they're going to do flow studies between this manhole and that, or whether that we're going to, you know, pour concrete in the bottom of manholes. At this level, we wouldn't say that. We want to reduce overflows. We want to reduce odors. We want to reduce maintenance costs. Those are the kind of objectives we give them. And then we evaluate the proposals based on how they come back and say they're going to do it. And that's the way we award. And so I put out a pretty extensive scope of work in the services by the consultant. I've got some links to existing documents that you might find interesting. I challenge anybody to read all of those.
I have. What do you want to know? You want to know about the 2007 land use plan? What do you want to know?
Yeah, the land use plan, I don't think I included in here because I didn't have the exact name for it because I left it on my desk.
I have.
But no, I've got it. Okay. I just don't have the, I didn't have the specific name. But, so there's a very clear expectations for what we're looking for with the consultant. We'd have a review, obviously, by staff, but then we'd also have some type of ad hoc committee that would help in the review, because I think it would be important to get a couple members of the board to sit in on some discussions about this. As we review the proposals, 180 days might be a little bit short. I might have, if this went out on the streets like this, they might say, you want to get summertime flows and wintertime flows, and we don't think you have the right data, so we'd like to have 9 months for it. But anyway, we may reconsider that. And lastly, the exact proposal contents, just basically a statement of qualifications specific to who's going to be involved, and then the methodology and approach that they would use to get to that end result. And then there's some evaluation criteria for how we are going to select the consultant to do the work. And then lastly, they will also include in a separate sealed envelope their compensation proposal, because again, it's not a bid situation where we say you're completing the master plan for $120,000. It's they'll give an estimated cost to do what they say there needs to be done, but they'll have an hourly rate by task, by trade, and that way if we say, okay, we can't do this and this, that's just too much, or they've come up with a different way to approach it and it's much less or much more, we'll have a basis for negotiating that final scope and contract with them. Because that's what you do, is you select the consultant that gives you the best proposal that you like the best, and then you sit down and negotiate the right contract. But that is at the discretion of the board. That's not a legal requirement that you do it that way. I mean, you could say, no, I want a little bitter. I wouldn't want to be involved in that process. of working with a consultant that's a low bidder, because you will get low bidder and you will have a project that will not be good. It's like saying, I want the lowest cost surgeon.
No.
No, thank you.
Or the lowest, yeah. Lowest cost aircraft. No.
Yeah.
So are there any board comments? I'm just going to say, I think
well done. Yeah, it is. I went through it too, Kay. Is there existing now, or would this be the place where we would request a map of GCSD at the most, at the largest, the largest we can, of the entire district that shows all of our water systems, all of our sewer collection systems, and everything that we have responsibility for in one spot on a big map of all of our property, the boundary to boundary, north, south, east to west? Does that exist now? Do we have something like that? Or is this where we would ask for something like this? Or am I way out of line by asking for something like that? Because every time at every meeting he was talking about somebody needs to put in a new sewer line. What road? I don't know. Okay, well, it's right up here. Well, then we know, mm-hmm. Or we had a water break up on Merrill. Well, that's a long ways. He could go right there. And so we could see and have I'm a very graphic kind of guy, where that kind of stuff is. Am I way out of line by asking if that exists, or is this where we would get it?
Bo just said it's to possibly be in the 2001.
Yeah, look at the 2001 water plan. There are schematics, there are engineer drawings, mm-hmm. there's everything.
They'll update them.
Okay, I'll look there.
It's 184 pages.
I'll see if I can't find one there. Okay.
And they will take the digital data from the 2001 plan, and they will add in the digital files from the 2018 plan, and they will produce a comprehensive final version of it, updated from the.
So they will use the old plan as I've been approached by something. They use the old plan and work off of that.
There is an as-built plan.
Yeah. Okay. Good. All right. That's good.
I think it's a good idea, though, just how specifically make sure that that's in the scope that they respond to, so that when they do have their fee schedule, that they clearly articulate those tasks to pull all that together.
Mm-hmm. It's just
when Louie was talking about Lift Station 5 and this and this and this and Tank 2, it would be nice to be able to just look at even a page that said where this, that had Lift Station 5 and Tank 2. So I can understand what he's talking about. I'm sure that other board members would like to have that also. Something like just doesn't have to be included in this scope of work, but if that could be given to the directors, that might be.
Sure, we got it. One of the problems with trying to put it on a single page is you can have Tank 2 and you can show where all the lift stations are, but you can't, there's no possible way of having street names.
Right.
Yeah.
The scale is too small.
You can make three pages.
A big scale map or something. I don't know.
But even this time Mount Lake, this scope is 2,000 houses.
First of all, there is a flyer. There's an aerial map. If you guys don't have it, I'll be glad to provide it to you. That was done in 1998 by Harold Craig, who hired it out.
That's right.
I have a question regarding this. So would it be a good idea, I don't know, I'm just running this by you, would it be a good idea to contact the company that did the last master plan? Because I still think if you use that company, there's parts of the master plan that have to be tweaked, but they've done all the footwork already. They would just, it might save the district $30,000-$40,000 to have, I know you're going to pick and put it out to bid, but to have them just go in and tweak the existing master plan. Is that even a consideration? Mm-hmm.
They'll definitely get.
Who did it? Was
RBS?
And they're still, I've used them.
Yeah,
they're
good. They're very great. Good.
They will definitely get a copy of the proposal, and they'll,
Steve Spinker, I think
of that. That's what all those great big white X's are you see on all these parking lots. I was here when they did that flyover, those big white crosses. Those were the
reference.
So anyway, one thing that you know, ultimately, this isn't specific in the master plan, but I do want to give you an example up on the...
Too many days.
This speaks to what you were just talking about. This is not in our district here, but I went through this process of taking the digital files and having a company actually, they put it on an overlay of layers. It's a web-hosted map, so it's an open architecture where you've got streets and service connections and mains, and you can zoom into the main size, pressures, locations, everything, valve locations, hydrants, tanks, and you can have it on your iPhone. You can have, you know, you can calculate, the, you know, how many feet of main do I have to flush here or whatever just by clicking on it. You can pull up a report of every property owner in an area immediately, one click. So there's a lot of uses of it. It is $4,000 a year, but for this district that doesn't have the staff in Don Pedro, it's a jewel. But that's the kind of stuff that ultimately, if we can get to that, it saves us a lot of money. But as a result of this engineering process, we'll have a digital file that then you just give to the third-party company. They drop it in, and it has all these layers, and I can actually find marijuana farms with this map.
Oh, my God.
Because
oh,
they update
the address.
I mean, you know, it's really a trip. I can see if somebody's stealing washout. I can get an overall look at this with a terrain map.
Oh, you have it.
Because they update it frequently enough.
Me too.
And so, anyway, it's just an interesting side note that progressing there. We're trying to see if on the wastewater side, if there's going to be enough money left to be able to do some of that under the planning grant, you know. But anyway,
cool.
Okay. Awesome. Okay, so our action here, I guess, is to approve so that you can move forward and get on with doing an RFP.
Yeah, I'll just incorporate all of this information into the standard RFP process.
I move that we approve the scope of work scheduling consultant selection process for the 2019 Integrated Water and Wastewater Master Plan, which is attached, as submitted, actually with a few additional add-ons that we suggested during discussion here.
Sure.
But, I mean, I think as a framework, this is
great.
Excellent.
I'll second.
Yeah.
So moving seconded to approve the scope of work scheduling consultant selection process for the 2019 Integrated Water and Wastewater Master Plan. We got to come up with better platforms.
I wanted to call it WIMP or something, or GIMP. It had a good, but I...
Groveland Integrated
Water.
Is there any discussion? Any public comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, so get that one down. All right. Item G. Discussion and action related to the election of board officers for calendar year 2019.
You notice there's nothing coming from my voice.
Well, no, you don't get to have it.
I know. I just am.
I'll mention. I mean, we've talked about this. We never really added this to the board protocol. Kind of talked about it a little bit, but I don't think we ever reached a conclusion. But one of the things that all of the seminars we go to, one of the points that they make regularly about boards is that it is a good idea to move the presidency around. Not necessarily in an every year thing, but because you're not doing the whole job if you don't be president some of the time. I have been president for 5 years.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought it was 3. Wow. 5.
Oh, yeah. I would like to see, you know, somebody else take that on. Who's interested?
I would do it.
I would like to nominate Director Jan Kwiatkowski as president of the GCSD board.
For 2019.
For 2019, yes.
I'll second that. Okay, so it's moved and seconded to, I guess we're moving right into the, past the discussion. Moved and seconded to nominate Janice Lepkowski.
Do we go into discussion now if we need
now
to?
Now we can have, is there any discussion?
I was thinking Nancy would do a good job.
Doesn't want to do it. Not now. I'm like the newest person. I just figure I still have lots of stuff to learn.
Any further discussion?
I nominated Nancy because she's always got...
Janice,
I'm sorry. I nominated Janice because she's always got pertinent questions about the payables and the budget and which is very important to me, and she's much better at it than I am. And she's always able, she would be able to keep us like you have, Bob, you know, working on our new norms and protocols. Like you corrected me today, and I appreciated that, and I thank you for that. She would be able to do those same kind of things. And that's why I nominated her. And she's a good leader as well.
I don't know if public comment is appropriate for this, but I'll open public comment. Is there public comment? Ms. Brown?
You know, just thinking, I think the two ladies have the two-year term and the three gentlemen have the four-year term, and that would give, you know, a chance to do her presidency. I think she's very competent, and I respect her a lot, and I think she would be a great president.
Any other public comment?
I'm going to miss you, Bob.
I didn't hear. What did you say?
I'm going to miss him as president.
Oh. He's been president since I've been on here, since November.
Well, we've had quite a bit of discussion about that in these seminars, and I've come to kind of be persuaded by that reasoning that, you know, being president is a different perspective than being a board member that isn't president. And it's good to have that experience. Okay, public comment is closed. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? So we have unanimous approval of Janice Lepkowski to be president of the college.
So what you asked for.
Thank you.
I'm going to not speak for Vice President.
Thank you. Short time.
Short time.
Well, with that said, I think Nancy should be the Vice President, and here's the reason my thinking is that she's going to have to be President within the next 2 years. Being Vice President and maybe move into President would be a good move.
I'm going to support that nomination of John's because of her business head. She is very business oriented, and that can do nothing but help us.
And she's a sewer customer.
Customer service oriented.
And customer service
oriented. And she's a sewer customer.
Yeah. Ah, yes.
Yeah. That's something many of us could say.
That means that Joel opens
so much to you. I apologize to the $2 on the floor.
Oh, dear.
Okay. See, I actually think Spence would be, just because he's got the district knowledge that I don't have.
There's plenty of time for me to do that.
He beat you sooner. We've got to vote on the one.
Well, I know, so.
Okay.
Any
further discussion?
Suspense.
Any public
did
comment?
You second that? You seconded.
I seconded Nancy. Yes, I did. Yeah.
Okay. So it's moved and seconded to appoint or elect Nancy Mora as Vice President for calendar 2019. We've already had the discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Yeah. Are you opposed or abstaining? Or voting for?
I'd say opposed, yeah.
Okay, so we have a 4-1 vote.
So does the nominee have to accept?
No, they don't have to accept.
Well, they don't have to. I mean, it'd kind of be silly to do that. Would you prefer to not accept? I mean,
you're not going to do a whole lot of it. I haven't done a lot.
This is true.
true.
No, seriously. You might get one or two.
You reemphasize the fact that what the president is the presiding officer in the meeting.
I guess my logic also is, like, you know, Kate said, okay, we're the two that have the two-year terms, but you had already prefaced it, like, doesn't necessarily mean you want the presidency to turn over every single year, because you'll barely be getting grounded and figuring things out, and then poof, you'd be off and done, and then the next person, and I think it just seems like it wouldn't necessarily be, you know, so I'm thinking the presidency should be like a two-year term, probably, you know, or, you know, something like that. I'm sure after 5 years, you're ready to move on.
Well, this is something that we can further discuss in our protocols. We never really got around to it.
And I also want to point out that our terms may be 2 years, but that does not stop us from
Of course not.
John's done it several times.
You can get appointed in more questions again. All right, so item three is I will move that we appoint Jennifer Flores to be the district's board secretary.
Second that.
Moved and seconded to appoint Jennifer Flores
Absolutely.
To the district's board secretary. Is there any discussion?
Well, if you didn't, who else would do it?
She spells better than Pete does, too.
Spencer.
I had to get him somehow.
All right. Moved and seconded to appoint Jennifer Flores, district's board secretary. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? So we have unanimous approval of that.
One just clarification. Janice, did you actually vote aye for your appointment, or did you abstain? I didn't catch that.
I abstained.
Okay.
It takes four-fifths for this, doesn't it?
He didn't call for any abstention, so I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah,
he did call for abstention.
Jan, Prez, and Nancy.
Anyhow, moving on to item 6H, adoption of the resolution approving the recently developed board norms and protocols.
Well, this is interesting. It's my online version is doing some weird things. It could have been in your print version. Does it have anything in the fields of meeting date and all that? Yeah, it does. Okay.
You click on it.
In the district.
Oh.
When you send these to me, you're freaking out. I'm like, I have nothing here. I have to click in all the fields to pop.
Wow, interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. I was dabbling with PDF forms.
Who's on first?
Yeah. Anyway, that's what happens when your secretary's gone and you dabble on your own. It doesn't work out too well. Sorry.
Can I ask a quick question for you? Is our handbook and the director's handbook going to be updated? Because all over those, we've got dates that are wrong. Like, our meetings are on Thursdays and first Thursday of the month.
Sometimes we've changed our meetings. Like,
Yes. The answer is yes.
Okay. Because I haven't heard talk about those.
So screwed up.
Policies.
We've actually, we did update that when we changed the actual meeting. That was an excerpt that when we brought Redline to the board, the only thing that didn't change is I didn't resend out a whole new policy manual to all the board members after that revision was changed. But it's changed as a district document, so I can send that out to everybody.
Okay, thank you.
Because
our online
is
Okay.
Can I say? Okay, this is reverting back one step, but I'd like to officially thank Bob Swan for his presidency last year because you maintained this board on a straight and narrow course through a very tumultuous time. You lost three directors, you got three directors on, and you kept us all speaking the same language as best you could and got us going, and I appreciate what you did. Don't think it should go unnoticed.
And going well.
And kept keeping us going. Thank you for that. And the board has settled down significantly. And thank you because of you, your leadership. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, now, back on.
There's a reason you were nominated
That's right.
I was the only one who would do it. So what we have here in this packet is the norms.
Yes. You don't have the remainder because I didn't get it done. Sorry. I just didn't. I wasn't able to.
Why don't we just...
Why don't you table it?
I mean, you can take up, if you want to take these up separately, or we can finish it off in a special meeting.
To the next meeting. Because we're almost...
Right, okay.
1 o'clock and we're almost...
I'm good.
At the witching hour.
Here's the situation.
This is old business?
We were made aware. You heard our fire department talk about a grant application. On Saturday afternoon, I received a request from them to have a resolution on the agenda to approve this grant application. They need it by the 19th. I really couldn't amend the agenda as an emergency item and add that to the agenda. But if you would like, we can do a quick meeting to deal with the norms and protocol and that resolution at the same time, or we can move this out to the January meeting. Either way, we need to deal with that resolution for that grant application in a timely manner, either like late this week or Wednesday of next week.
For me, it would pretty much have to be this week because I'll be out of town next week.
What grant are you talking about?
He was talking the fuels reduction. The fuel clearing.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
We definitely want to get that.
You bet.
Yeah, and they're going through the effort of doing the application and everything on our behalf. So
I'm good. 12th, 13th, or 14th. Mm-hmm. That's Wednesday, Thursday, or what is it?
We just need it. Yeah.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Yeah.
I would prefer when. Well, it's on Thursday. I got a blood draw. It depends on what time it is. This is going to be a short meeting, right?
Well, would you prefer to move the norms and protocol to our January meeting and just deal with the resolution?
Yes.
I mean, Friday is okay.
I'm hearing yes is all over the place. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that okay with
you? Fire should be short.
Does that work?
Yeah.
Okay.
Friday, okay?
Friday's good. What time?
Friday the 14th, right?
Nine o'clock?
Done. I'll get the stuff out today. I just got
okay,
the
so
resolution.
Friday is 14th here.
0900.
It'll be a very short meeting.
So I'm done. Look, everybody.
Is this what you're doing? Just 9 o'clock, you're doing a resolution, and that's it for this grant thing.
Yeah.
So it's not a long meeting, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Terrific.
Okay, good. We'll be adjourned.
A second. Beat you.
unanimous seconding. Moving seconded to adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Objection. Okay. Friday at the 14th.
We are adjourned at here. 1:07 p.m.
That was one of the best meetings we've had.
John, I don't want to say congratulations.